I'm sorry, thank you. Good evening.
You got her on that one.
Welcome to Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors' regular 4:00 meeting on March 4, 2015. Would you please stand so we can say the pledge and a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. First on the agenda is adoption of the agenda, and I think our county administrator.
Yes, ma'am. One, you may all have other comments too, but one thing I'd like to defer, tab A, the JRWA service agreement. I just got another iteration of that from Louisa about 20 minutes ago, and I'll brief you on that later tonight, but it's not really ready for decision now because of the extra item that just came in.
So. Okay. So we're not alarmed about that. It's just that we need to get it right.
Just defer.
And we need to get it right. So what I need a motion, please.
All right. Any other changes, if you
any other changes on the agenda?
Motion to defer.
And accept.
Yeah, the agenda.
I accept the agenda and defer item.
Not the agenda?
No.
So I think what you want is a motion to adopt the agenda with tab A deferred.
And deferred tab A.
Okay. We'll first defer.
We have a second. We have a motion by Mr. Hollenbrook and a second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, anyone opposed?
I make a motion to accept the agenda.
All right.
As modified.
It's modified.
I thought that was the motion.
Yeah, the way you said it. The way you said it.
Okay.
Modified agenda.
All right. I thought we did that.
It's the last thing I'm saying tonight.
It's really tough getting through this stuff, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yeah.
All right. Who wants to second the second motion?
I vote you start over.
Yes.
Okay. What we're doing, we are deferring A, the James River Water Authority Agreement, and we're going to accept the agenda with that deferral. So can I have somebody? Did I mess it up too?
I think it's clear you're all voting for that.
So I think
I understood that that's what
you understood it. Yeah. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Good grief! Woo!
I got ready to vote nay just.
All right. Now the next thing we have is the county administrator's report.
Can we defer that?
No, please.
You can
no.
Indeed. Just a few things, Madam Chair, members of the board. The Charlottesville Investment Collaborative, we've been talking for some time now that their next class is actually focused on Louisa and Fluvanna residents, and that class actually kicks off tonight and for the next for 17 weeks in a row, and that's at the Best Western Zion Crossroads. And I think there's 10 attendees in this class that were signed up, 6 from Fluvanna, 4 from Louisa, so it's great.
That's good.
And it's really a good opportunity to have something closer to home and try to build that kind of classroom opportunity here near for our residents. And then June 10th, the community development team is also going to do some presentation for the class about planning and building permit processes. And then just a reminder, I sent out some information late last week about the Louisa County and Louisa County Water Authority town hall meeting. That will be on April 7th at Kent Store at 7 p.m. Very similar to the last one. This one will have a little bit more identified on routing of the pipeline, or intended routing. So they'll have those maps. And just a reminder, if 3 or more of you are going to show up, you need to make a decision pretty soon so that we can call that a public meeting if you want to speak. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to talk while you're there. And if you make it a public meeting, we just have to announce in advance, and that way, if all 5 are you there, you call it to order, then you're allowed to talk, and then you would, you know, adjourn at the end. That's up to you, but just don't expect to be able to contribute if there's 3 or more that show up and you haven't done that.
Okay, but if it's 3 of us and say Mr. Sheridan wants to speak, can one of us leave?
Yeah, as long as 3 of you aren't there.
Madam Chair, you can speak, but you speak as a citizen.
Okay.
I could speak because it comes across my line.
Well, yeah, if you were, if the
okay.
issue was...
It's a fine line, though.
It's a fine, yeah.
Yeah, the issue was something that was personal to you and you stood up and said, I want to speak on my personal interest, that would be
right.
nice to you.
Okay,
it won't be a problem. I've got a right. baseball game.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So probably only be two of you anyway. And so, but again, if you end up deciding that you want to have three or more there,
right.
you can just call it a public meeting, call it to order, we'll publish it in advance, and that would solve that dilemma. But just reminder. So April 7th and at Kent Store. And then the State Corporation Commission in a couple weeks will be here to do their 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock public hearings for the Aqua Virginia requested rate increase. That'll be here in the circuit courtroom. And we are trying to get all the electronics set up such that we can have overflow downstairs and still hear the proceedings if need be in the two courtrooms, but we're working on that. And then your work session next week will be in the Morris Room, budget work session, and we'll have all your documents updated and then everything will be on the screen. And hopefully you can work right off your budget balancing worksheet. And I've got a number of updates for you on dollars, changes that have happened since our last meeting. So next week you'll have a variety of updates. I'll do that first, and then you can go down through your list.
Okay.
And most of the updates are positive, so
good.
That's a good thing. Any questions I can answer?
Any questions for County Administrator?
Nope.
If not, we have Board of Supervisors updates.
I'm sorry, ma'am. One more quick thing, sorry. I'm not sure that any of you want to do this, but VACO is trying to get supervisors to do a little 45-second, essentially cell phone videos of themselves and their county, showcasing something in their county. This information sheet explains that.
Okay.
If you decide, any of you decide you want to do that, let me know and we can help you with it. But that's the information from VACO.
All right. I'm sure one of us won't do that.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, Steve said he was going to bring it up, the sale of the two elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
We met on a Friday. And we have a realtor lined up pretty well for that. And naturally, we're going to try to sell them as soon as we can at a decent price.
Great. Good.
Yeah, and that realtor firm will be coming back to us with a formal proposal on their sales plan. And Mr. Weaver and I and the other team will get back together with them to decide if that plan meets our needs, and then we'll move forward on it. So,
good. Mr. Sherrod, do you have anything you want to report?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Mr. Vine?
Piedmont Workforce Network Council, we met basically to discuss the interagency agreement, if you would, that the counties would have and work out those details. That was pretty straightforward, nothing exciting from that standpoint. I have TJPDC tomorrow night, so.
Okay.
I don't have anything to report there.
If you can make it there tomorrow.
If I can make it there tomorrow, right.
You're already in there, though, so you should be all right.
Hopefully I'll be there.
Yes.
They just upped it to 5 to 8.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the Youth Advisory Council meeting, and we just, we talked about the terrific Tuesday, and we had like 140-some students participating. It's going very well.
They've had two so far.
If
anybody would like to come by, it'll be next Tuesday.
Okay.
After school, at the middle school.
Mm-hmm. After middle school. And I went by the first meeting, and the kids were doing some really nice things. I went to the most exciting meeting that I always look forward to going to, and that's the Ravenna River Basin Commission. And I go for myself and Bob.
Yeah. Thank you.
So we are working on kind of identifying where we are. There are so many organizations involved in the watersheds and so forth. And we think, and they're all trying to get the same grant money. So we're thinking about an umbrella approach with all of these entities around so that we won't be pulling from the same source of water. I did bring you an interesting report from Streamwatch that I think it's better that you read something from me trying to tell you what's going on. It's just such a learning thing for me. We're fortunate to have Mr. Moss on it. He's been on it for years, and he knows it like the back of his hand. You know, he sits there talking about the DVC and the POPs and all that stuff because he's so familiar with it. But we are trying to, of course, keep the James River clean, and it's all about Chesapeake Bay and the James River, as we know, is very important to us. And also the Ravan and the James River, they're our rivers that come through Vanna County. So, and the last time we talked about recreation on the water, and the next time we have that kind of meeting, I'm going to ask Jason Smith maybe to go with me so that he can see what they're talking about, what kind of we can bring some economic development using our rivers. Okay, anyone else?
No, I think we've had some reports on this over the years on the Streamwatch, which is very interesting.
I love the one that we got this past year when it talked
right.
about the waters and the ones that were really good.
Really fair and good.
Right. Mm-hmm. We've gotten several of those reports in the past.
Okay, so I don't feel too bad. Sound like we are on the ball. We really know what we're doing. Now
we have some drinking water.
Yes. All right. The next thing we will do, I'll have the public comments. I'm going to open public comments. If you'd like to come speak to the board, would you please come to the mic and give your name and your address, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone? If not, I will close the first public comment. Public hearing, we do not have any this afternoon. We do have action matters, and the first one is our appointment to the Social Service Board for Fork Union.
Yes, ma'am. There's the member that is on the board
Giles.
Finishing, yeah. Laura Giles is finishing her term, and the only applicant we have for that position is Deborah Johnson.
Deborah Johnson. And you read about Deborah Johnson. You knew her father.
Your package has her information.
You knew her father.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He served on
Willis Thomas.
Willis Thomas years ago.
I've worked with him in the PTOs and all.
Right. And she's very active in the community. So may I have a motion, please, on this one?
Sure.
It's on the screen here, Mr. Weaver.
Oh, okay. I was looking here. Madam Chair. I move to appoint Mr. Johnson to the Social Service Board replacing Laura Giles in the Fork Union District with a term to begin immediately and to terminate June 30th, 2017.
Mm-hmm. Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Weaver and seconded by Mr. Hollenbrook. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. The next one is fiscal year 16 health insurance. Ms. Gail Parrish, our HR manager.
Good evening, Madam Chairman and members. So time again, we have to renew our health insurance plan. We have to have a decision for me to be able to submit it by April 1st. And we finally got our numbers in, and they were good. We were anticipating an increase with some heavy debates one afternoon. We were able to come back with a proposal of that was, in my opinion, extremely good.
Mm-hmm. And not because they wanted to, it's because Ms. Parrish threatened to hurt them. We really worked closely with our provider, and it's really important for us because it saves the county money, but also saves our employees money.
It was about $84,000 we saved.
From this year, huh?
From this year. From anywhere between $84,000 to $150,000 was saved.
Oh, from the expected.
Right. From the what was expected.
Any wedge that was in the budget, we don't have to have that.
Good.
Just as a quick review, per the plan, which I highly recommend we stay with simply because we have to establish ourselves. And this will... If we jump from one plan to another, to one carrier to another, we don't get very good rates. And that's why I've had to kind of beat up on people because that's one of the things that is not in our favor as of yet. It's a good plan. It's it's probably more comprehensive than many plans that are out there. The plan does require that. It is administered by the Department of Human Resources for the state. And so I don't have a lot of latitude with them, with the plans. We are required to offer two of the Key Advantage plans, and we have to offer the HDHP, high deductible health plan. This year, I suggest we stay with the same plans that we've had. We go with the Key Advantage 250 and the Key Advantage 500 and the high deductible health plan. The reasoning is the first year this was what we offered. The second year we moved and we brought in the we dropped the 250 and brought in the 1,000. Many employees wanted the 250 back. There is a significant difference, even though it is quite expensive policy. A lot of people wanted that. So we stayed with that. This year, though, the plans are, after discussing and looking at our dental, what they are offering instead of just three options, there's going to be a total of six. Right now, the dental plan is a comprehensive plan. It covers a lot more than just the basics. What I was negotiating for was no dental plan at all to try and drop our costs for the people who did not want a dental plan. Can't do that with their agreement that they have with DHRM. So they finally came back and they're offering everybody, not just us, a basic plan, which basically is at no cost to the employee. The employee can have dental that they covers just the just the preventative and basics, your cleaning and your checkups at no cost. Wow. The plan would pay for that, but it does not pay for anything else. That it and so that would be with each one of them. The KA-250, you'd have either the comprehensive dental plan or you'd have the one with just the basic. The same with the 500 and the high deductible plan. The high deductible plan in the past never had a vision part to it. It does have a vision part this year.
And that's the only one with a vision part?
No, they all have vision. Every plan has vision.
Oh, that didn't. Okay.
And these also will be offered to the retirees, and the differences in the dental plans can be offered to the retirees also, if they're on the non-Medicaid.
But they would pay the full cost.
They pay the full cost, sure. Yes. It's 100%. It's direct bill to them. No administrative cost to us at all.
But it gives them access to a group health plan, sure. Which is good. Mm-hmm.
So. Which is still cheaper.
Right. Yeah.
Yes. There were several changes this year. They've added to all of the plans and applied behavioral analysis. In the past, the limit was $35,000. Now it's no limit. Dental benefits, as I just explained, they're also going to have, it's really neat, a doctor from the computer or webcam. You can have your appointment on that,
yeah, I saw that.
And you're just charged a flat, whatever it is, copay, if it's a high deductible, I think it's like a flat $40, $38, something like that. They can prescribe for you and everything. They had it on their commercial groups last year, and it was highly successful. A lot of people preferred that than to go into the doc, make an appointment and go into the doctor's office. You tend to have less crazy tests and stuff. You know, if the doctor can't help you, they will refer you to your private physician. We will also be picking up the PCORI or CER fee. That is a fee that IRS requires. It is through the Health Care Act, and it in the past, Anthem used to pay it. That was part of the plan. New IRS changes are that the Sponsor has to be the people that pay it, so we will be paying it. It'll be anywhere between $500 to $600. It's based off of how many members you have in the plan. The first won't be due until fiscal year 16. ID cards, everybody will be getting new ID cards because the prescription drug tiers, they've added an extra tier to the drugs. So everybody will be getting new cards this year. Out-of-pocket maximums have increased. However, the reason that that happened was in negotiations, we were able to include, which was not included in the past, prescription drugs to be part of the total out-of-pocket. And that's one of the largest personal expenses that happens when you have a fairly healthy person. If anything, it's going to be prescription drugs that are going to be their highest cost, so at least that'll go towards their total out-of-pocket. The biggest change is the high-deductible health plans. They were embedded, which meant that if you had a family plan, and even though the deductible is $1,500 per person, if you didn't meet the total deduction for the family plan, even the one person's would not begin getting payment from the plan until the whole family plan deduction was met. It is no longer, it is now embedded where now each person, once they meet that $1,500, well, it won't be $1,500, it's $2,800. Once they meet the deductible, even if the whole family plan has not met it, the policy will start paying the 2080. In the HDHP, they did not have out-of-network benefits. You had to go to somebody within the network to have it count. Now they've added out-of-network. And they've also added the routine vision. How they calculated our renewal. Our enrollment, very little change from last year. I have some 88% of eligible employees are enrolled in the health insurance. Of those, 34% are in the KA250 plan, 63% the most is KA500, and then 3% of our participants are in the HDHP. Hopefully, more and more people will start looking at the HDHP. This is going to be something I will be working with, trying to train, because in my opinion, it won't be long till those other two are going to be so cost out. I was able to hold them this year. I'm not going to be able to hold those prices down. They're going to keep escalating. So the HDHP, we have to start planning on how to deal and how to work within that. I'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. Large claimants was another big one that was to our advantage. We had no, over the past 2 years, we've had no claim over $90,000. That's very unusual. And we've only had five claims over $25,000. So that was one of my bullets that I went in and I said, look, you know, we have a great experience. We need you to take more into consideration. So those were the two primary things that they looked at. They go and they look back 18 months. Well, I went back 24 months because I thought our 24 months was excellent. Our renewal rates are the HDHP. It went down for the one with the regular dental, like last year's. It went down 6%. It was from 440 to 415. It's a monthly premium. If with the preventative dentistry, it goes down to 401, which is a 9% decrease. The KA500 and the KA250 plans, there was no change in the premium cost monthly for the regular plans. We did get a 2% discount by if somebody chooses the preventative basic dental plan rather than the comprehensive. And that's across the board. As a county, we have made the contribution per month up to $490 for the single, any regardless of which plan they choose. For a dual, which would be employee plus one other person, we contribute $685. And then as a family plan, $890.
And that's no change from last
year. Year.
But in some cases, our staff will save a little bit of money because of the decrease, or not, at least not go up. No one will see an increase in rate unless they change to a different plan.
One thing we are going to be adding this year, and I'd like the board to consider a participation, the county participating in this plan, and this is called a health savings account. As I said, we've got to start training and talking to our employees about future and how are they going to meet their health needs. What are we going to do and start planning for it? Because they're not going to be able to afford those lower deductible plans that are so highly comprehensive. So I'm wanting them to start looking at the health of the high deductible health plan, especially employees who generally only use their wellness benefits. They don't go to a doctor but maybe once a year or something like that. Ones who are fairly healthy, those are the ones we're wanting to target now to start teaching them to learn how to work within a health savings account and the high deductible health plan. You cannot have, it's an IRS tax savings plan. You cannot have it unless you are enrolled in a qualified high deductible health plan. Our high deductible health plan does qualify for our employees to also have a health savings account. Basically, a health savings account, I say it's like an IRA. It's a savings for your retirement. You can put in your money each month. It's a pre-tax. It's a tax savings. You put it into the account. Sometimes employers contribute. Sometimes they don't. It's not a requirement. It does help. That savings account earns interest. As you put it in, it grows. You do not, like in our Flex account, you use or lose. These accounts roll over every year, keep growing every year, just like an IRA would. It keeps growing. And you get the combinations of your earnings and your contributions. So if you don't have to use it a whole lot every year, that keeps growing, and eventually it covers whatever your out-of-pocket would be for the a high deductible. It can even go even further so that when you are retiring, it helps pay for a long-term care facility. It helps pay for Medicaid, supplemental plans. It is free, tax-free. It's also, you can use it during the year if you need to help cover cover that deductible piece under the HDHP. So we are going to be first finding it. We have to have a trustee. We can't do it ourselves. It has to be a certified trustee. First Financial Group of America, who are our administrator of our other plans, optional plans, and our 125 plan. They are certified. They will be doing. They are going to be setting it up, and they will administer it. It's very little administration on that side because it's not monitored at this time as close as the Flex plan. It's the employee who has to determine. If they get audited, it's an individual audit, not the whole plan is audited like it is with a Flex plan. What the advantages is that it is a tax-free distributions. When you pull the money out to pay for medical expenses, that is not taxed. You get no penalty or anything for taking your money out of that account. After the age of 65, you can take it out for non-medical expenses, and you're not penalized.
You don't pay taxes on it.
You don't pay taxes on it. It also helps save the county. If the county contributes, it does help on the tax because that is a pre-tax contribution, just like our contributing to the health insurance plans, premiums. Here's some of the benefits of offering an HSA plan. It's compatible health plans. They cost less. Even if we don't stay with the Anthem, we will be most likely offering a high deductible plan from somebody. So, and those plans normally cost less. So they're eventually, hopefully, we will not be having to, it's not going to cost us as much on our contribution side. HSAs tend to change employee behaviors. When you're having to, even if it's coming out of that HSA, the money, it's more my money than the health insurance money, and you kind of, or the flex money, it's more your money that you're managing. So you're less likely to just go to the emergency room when you have a cold because you know it's going to cost you, and it's going to cost you out of your pocket right up front in the very beginning. Rather than, oh, well, my health insurance, it's only going to cost me this flat amount, $150, instead of the $2,000 that an emergency room usually costs when you walk in there. Those type of things. It also makes you be more responsible when the doctor, to talk to your doctor. Okay, they want to run all these tests. Well, why? What are these tests for? What are you looking for? How are you going to do it? It also encourages employees to utilize their wellness plans under the HDHP. All wellness is 100% paid. So for people who don't go and even utilize their wellness, don't get those regular checkups, they're going to go and get that checkup so that they, it's a preventative, you know, let's get it before something is wrong. It can also be used, like I said, once retirement, for the supplement your Medicare. And it also lowers your tax expenses. So those are some of the benefits of an HSA. What I'd like to recommend just to start helping with the HSA is for the employees that are that enroll in the HDHP for the single only, right now we don't pay, you know, the $490 is what we would pay if it were the KA250 or the KA500. We would only pay right now per month for each one either $414 or $401. $414 plus the $76 would be the $490. I think that would encourage at least our single people on the single plan to start getting used to working with an HDHP and everything, and getting involved. It would cost us a little less than $3,000 over what we paid last year in our health insurance, total health insurance costs. If everybody, it won't cost us a dime more if anybody changes from a KA500 to the HDHP. It would just be the few people that are currently enrolled in the 2000. I mean the in the HDHP plan. So are there any questions?
Any questions for Ms. Parrish?
So the $76 is only for the single payers?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, the part of the problem is that our we pay $490, $685, $890. And the $685, the $890 is lower than any plan cost. But on the single, the HDHP, we pay more than what the single HDHP plan costs, and therefore there's this cost savings there. So if you can encourage people to go in there, at worst, someone that was getting $490 towards a health plan and move to the HDHP
would continue to get $490, but $76 from the county would go tax-free from them. They could do tax-free, but pre-tax and go into their health savings account, which would help encourage them to use that plan, which long-term will save the county more money and probably the individual, too, because the plans are much lower cost. But initially, starting out, there's no way to get the employee plus one and employee plus family on it now because it would be a significant increase.
Yeah, based off of you know, projections and so forth of how many people I feel might go into the HDHP, it'd be around $9,000 increase cost to us if we go with the everybody.
Mm-hmm. And this is a new concept, or has it been around?
It's been around for a while. Since I've been here, I've been wanting to introduce it.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It's an advantageous, it's a good selling point. A lot of employees have asked, do you have an HSA?
Mm-hmm.
When they're looking at the
account limited in terms of certain types of investment vehicles, or how does that work?
You mean on what they can use it for?
HSA account.
It has to be a certified trustee. Most banks do. Most financial groups will do it. Insurance companies and so forth. Gotcha. I go with First. So even an employee, they can, when they leave, it's their account. They take it with them. They can roll it into a different account, or they can keep it with that one. First Financial, the reason why I go with them is they are our administrator of our 125 plan. They are trustee of it, and currently they're not charging us anything to do this. The banks that I spoke to and other financial institutions would charge us a monthly fee to administer the plan.
But I think the question is what type of investments are? Is there a choice?
It's a flat percentage amount based off of how much is in the account. The first 500, there is no percentage increase, no increase. From 501 to 2,500, it's, and this is based off of last year's, the IRS sets up a new one, they haven't put out this year's numbers, it would be 0.09%.
Interest
per year.
I think the core question that you were asking, Mr. O'Brien, is can I put it in this type of investment or this type of investment? Is there a choice of the type of investment?
It's like putting it into a savings account.
But the tax benefit.
Right. And what is the calculated savings if, you know, say 15% of the employees move to an HSA account? Or the high deductible health plan.
I have that. I had 20%. And I think I was trying to remember if I have that 20% in there on my.
Yeah,
no.
I think you included in these numbers what the number enrolled.
Yeah, there's the right. That's the number enrollees, the changes, but I'm trying to remember the number. I had the percentage saving. Because when I talked to everybody, they said about 20%. No, 20% is going to probably go to the preventative dental one. I did not pull numbers as to if more people went to the HDHP. This year, I do not believe it would only be a single person if a single went to it. If we do the 73. It won't cost us anything extra if we do the 73. It would save us $73 a month if somebody moved to it. The incentive for them to move from the 500 plan to that HDHP, I think, would be increased by that, us meeting, you know, doing a contribution into their HSA plan.
Well, they get, so let's say someone's on this plan right here now, the 531. That's the KA500 with full dental. They pay $531 out of pocket every month out of their paycheck.
No, that's the total premium.
I'm sorry, they pay $41. That's the total premium. If they go to the HDHP,
they don't pay
zero
anything
out of pocket. And if we're contributing to their health savings account, that's even a better deal for the employees. So someone that's on one of these that wants to reduce their premium cost every month, going to an HDHP, it will do that. There are other trade-offs, but Ms. Parrish can really explain it to the individuals and see what works best for them and their families. The problem on the higher plans is that our contribution, the county contribution, isn't higher than any of these plans. So if we contribute to the HSA, it would be just increased cost.
Yeah, but you have such a few number of people on there, and if your objective is to ultimately get people to move over to the high deductible health plan, I would suggest that you just promote it across the board and just do a flat rate of $76 to anybody who moves to it. Simply because that's, you only have a potential 28 employees, and I bet less than 10% take you up on that offer, 15% initially. And I would suspect that ultimately, you know, the movement to that type of a plan would save the county in the long term versus the 5 years.
Yeah, the HDHP premiums long term will be less than other premiums. Therefore, our share may be less. But it truly is all new cost this year if you do it for anybody.
I do understand
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
and
my estimate would be about $9,000.
You know, you're looking at maybe $300 a month if you had 10% of the people, 15% of the people of additional cost from that standpoint. But if your objective is to promote it across the board, it seems to me that that would be a better way to go about it. But, you know.
So do we, to make a decision.
Yeah, you'll have to make a decision for sure on this top.
Yeah.
To go with right. this plan.
And then if you choose to go with the HSA contribution for the county, which I think long-term is a good thing, you have to specify who's going to get that benefit. Because if it's the people moving to the employee-only high-deductible health plan, you're going to contribute $76. If every single one of, not going to happen, but if every single one of these employees that are on these plans now move to an HDHP, we're talking about 70 employees.
Cost anything in the employee only, because we have that savings. We are already paying the $490. From the dual group, the one that have employee plus one,
they
or
have
the family.
53 employees in that group, and expected 20%. No. So you have less than that. You have what, 13, 11?
Mm-hmm. 13, 22.
Yeah, it would only be currently we projected as 50,
so
two people.
10 or 15% mover, you're talking 5 to 7 mm-hmm. people. $76,
correct.
You know, times 7 people is.
Times 12.
Times 12, right. Yeah. Right, I get that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking $5,000, $6,000, but I bet that if we had 12, and that's why I asked the question, if you had 10% people more enrolled, you know, what would be expected, the expected premium overall in the long term in terms of dropping our overall rates or maintaining our rates, not necessarily
right.
dropping them. Which is
I'm looking at the KA500 and the KA250 next year going up. There's no if and but in it going up every year from that point forward. Just the health care costs and the way the trends that I've been watching and everything. This year, even though I had projected 10%, I was pretty much told when we started negotiating, when I brought them in to negotiate, that we were going to have a 6% increase across the board, except for the HDHP. And I kind of did some pounding and jumping up and down and having a little bit of fit, so I was able to, again this year, keep us from having an increase. I do not see me being able to do that going forward.
So what would happen to the people that are receiving $76 per month? Is that just for this current year? Is that the way it's phrased? Just for
no,
the current
you,
year?
You would put it in place. You have to adopt again next year. Right?
We would have to adopt whether we put $76, whether we match it or not. You know, every year we would determine what the match would be.
Look at there's a motion. There are two motions.
Yeah, the first motion is to approve the plan
right.
itself and
yeah.
what we're contributing towards the plan. I broke it out because I knew there would be some discussion.
Right.
I gave a second motion that would, a recommendation of the $76. I did include for employee only because that's how I presented it. But if you wanted to change that, you could change it to anybody enrolled in the high deductible health plan. They need to be enrolled in the high deductible health plan. Again, I was trying to be aware of what our budget is this year and the tight costs that we have. I wanted to at least have us start introducing that. We don't have to have a decision on the amount of the contribution tonight. That can be made at later.
And in the last and the second motion, you just have to decide whether you want to say employee only or anyone who moves to a HDHP.
And there's no concern about discrimination if it's employee
only
or not.
No, I did look that up because that was my concern when we first started talking about the employee only. And because of our reasoning of why we're doing it, because that piece is below what we would be paying for the other employees, that is why we would be able to do it without having a problem with it being
So are we
a different group
ready or comfortable to make both of those motions? Or do we need anything additional?
Yeah, it would be ideal if you yes. pulled the employee only language out. But someone will eventually ask, well, I'm in the family plan, how come I only get $76 when the employee, well,
yeah, it,
we're
it,
essentially
it
contributing
is going
to the
be
employee,
a problem.
Not to the whole family. But it is, it would be free money to the employee into their HSA, and then if they put any money in, it's all pre-tax. So it's a good way to go.
And it is pre-tax for us, so there is a little bit of a savings. Not, you know, it's not huge, but it is pre-tax.
I would recommend pulling the employee only myself. I just don't think the cost is going to be that substantial. But that's just my recommendation.
You recommend keeping an employee.
Yeah, just taking the
taking that word out.
Taking it out.
Just making it flat out available. Anybody
to anybody who's in the
high deductible
health plan. High deductible
health plan is eligible for the
$76. It'd make it easier for me to.
Yeah. Any other comments? Do we feel comfortable that we can make one motion at a time, the first one, and then the next one?
Okay. I move that the Board of Supervisors accept the Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield FY16, the Local Choice Health Plan proposal to be effective July 1st, 2015, and authorize the County Administrator to execute the plan and offer to eligible employees the Key Advantage 250, Key Advantage 500, and High Deductible Health Plan, with the County contributing up to $490 for an employee-only plan, $685 for dual-person plans, and $890 for a family plan. I move the board.
Let's vote on that one first.
Let's do one. Okay. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Ellenberg. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0. And now for the second motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a county contribution of $76 per month into the health savings account for each employee enrolled in the high deductible health plans.
Do I have a second?
Second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Hollenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. 5-0.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. Good work. We have deferred A. And now we're at the Zions Crossroad Water and Sewer System Engineering Design for Department of Corrections, DOC option. Mr. Nichols, our county administrator, is presenting.
Yes, ma'am. So essentially what this says is that it takes into account some of the recommendations from the preliminary engineering report from the RK&K, recommendations 7.1, 7.5, 7.9 and 7.11, which essentially is the Zion Crossroads water system from DOC to the corner of 250 and 15, and then shortly down Highway 15, south on Highway 15. The motions that are here are merely to proceed with the design of that system, not to do any construction or commit to any particular process, but this is the design of the system. And the dollars for the design of your Zion Crossroads water system were set aside about 3 years ago. $575,000 was set aside. The preliminary engineering report costs have come out of that, and then subsequently the design would come out of that if you choose to move forward with this. So there's a little bit of history I put on the motion page, but I think most of you know that. And then the recommendations were those four that came from that PER.
Okay, now this is a very important decision that we are in right now. So I'm going to ask for each board member to make some comments about this, anything that you would like to say, and then we will engage in our normal discussion of back and forth, and so we can get to whether we're going to do the motion or not. Mr. O'Brien, would you like to start? What do you?
I'd like to hear other people first.
Okay. All right. Mr. O'Brien.
There's Bob right there. I'm sure Bob wants to say something.
Bob, go ahead.
I'm all ready.
Bob, when I do this, what does that mean?
I told you I wasn't speaking tonight.
Okay, Bob's not speaking tonight. Do we have Mr. Sheridan? And that means I'm not coming back to you. Mr. Sheridan?
My thoughts are, when it comes to the water, if we're going to do it, we need to get pipes somewhere in the ground so that we're not waiting until after the water gets there, then trying to add them. And that's, I said that about 14 months ago.
And you're talking about DOC?
Well, DOC, yes, sir. I mean, I thought in the beginning that when we were talking about that, that would be the original first step.
What do we have in the budget right now for that?
You have $575,000 in cash you set aside 2 years ago.
Right. That's in the CIP?
In the CIP, yes.
Okay.
And out of that, the cost for the RK&K preliminary engineering review that they've done, we'll see. Was that 45K? I think it was about 45,000. So essentially, you've got $530,000 left in cash. Now, that may be off by just a little bit.
Right.
But let's say you've got $500,000 left. That money that was set aside originally was really for the design of the system, and then subsequently you would do debt financing. This has been talked about for several years, debt financing to actually construct a system. So you have essentially the 500 or slightly over in cash available towards design and any subsequent things that would need to happen, and then you'd have to do debt service to actually construct the system to whatever degree you want. I would recommend that when we do this, we specify pretty clearly that this design is designed such that it can work in phases. So you could do, 3 miles, 2 miles, add on here, and they would tell us the cost differential between those various ones in the design to construct the entire thing. Or if you just pulled this off, it would ramp back to this cost or that cost, because you may not want to, do the whole thing, or you may only want to go from, if you went to DOC, from DOC to Zion Crossroads, and not down 15. Or various things, but that's what an engineer would have to come in and tell us on a professional design for this project.
Okay, Mr. Weaver.
Well, what about the debt service then on this? We don't have anything in for that per se.
It's in your budget as debt service. It's not it's not in this motion, but based on the figures from RK&K, let's say 7.5 to 8.5 in that range.
What was it? In that ballpark, Wayne?
So 7.5 to 8.5, about 8 million for the full construction, including the water tower, the 500,000 gallons. So we've got a wedge in your budget for this year that would cover, I'm sorry,
next
a wedge
year.
In your budget for next year and out years.
17.
The 17 and out years that would cover that. And we have operating costs in your out years.
And that was like 600.
$655,000, I think.
That was a little bit over 2 pennies, you said.
Yeah,
2.5.
Well, yeah, 655 is what's in there. I can pull up quickly here and show you, but anyway, it is a little. If you constructed at, let me just pull it up here quickly. Oh. So pick your rate. Let's say it's 8 million, and that's 4%. 8 million over 20 years at 4% is approximately $640,000 on average for the payment. Now it goes down in subsequent years.
How many years?
20
years.
But it would this, you can see the whole sheet here if you want.
Yeah.
It goes from 700 at the high down to 416. But we take the average based on this for budgeting purposes on the first 6 or 8 or 10 years, and that's $640,000. I think what's in the budget in the out years is 655. Now, I doubt that 4% is where we're going to be at. It seems a little high. But so if you took it down to 3.5%, I'm not suggesting you do that, but I'm just saying if we came in at 3.5%, then that same dollar value is in the 617 range, 617,000. But I think what's in the budget, the wedge in the budget for the out years is 655K.
I think it was 900. It's actually
no, that's with JRWA. So I'll show you here. This
that's
is
for the 3%.
So this year we've got 255. That's for JRWA system. Next year is 905, but that equates to 255 plus 650. 255 is JRWA, 650 is Zion Crossroads at 8 million at 4%. Mm-hmm. And again, we don't know for sure it'll be 8 million, and we don't know for sure it'll be 8%, or 4%. Both of those are probably on the high end, but I wouldn't necessarily want to go to the low end now until we have an engineering design and know what it is. And then we'll by that time, we'll know pretty much what the debt costs would be, you know, based on pool costs. So that's what's in there, Mr. Weaver.
Okay. Mr. Weaver, you have some other?
Well, no. That my concern is, first of all, what's going to be our tax rate this year? And this adds to it every time we're talking about two water systems. So where are we going to quit on all this? And what's the return? Where's the study on the return that we're going to get on this water system? Where are those figures? You know, some people seem to think we're going to make a profit on them. Staff has indicated there is no profit really will be on this. And how long is it going to be before we even break even? I mean, when you go into a business, is this the way you go into a business? I certainly wouldn't go into a business this way. I'd have some projections, some figures. I pretty well know where I was. And certainly DOC looks like the best deal.
Can I use that one?
And I don't know about approving this when we're faced with a debt, we're talking about 93.5 cents now. You're going to be adding more onto that? Is that what this board wants to do? I'm not sure I want to do that.
Okay, any other comments?
Yeah, I want to.
I thought you said you were going to speak.
Did you actually read that?
He just wanted to wait until the two of us and then we can
take a break. Go ahead.
Yes, well, there we can take a break.
Go ahead.
You're near Robinson. I agree, Mr. Weaver. That's it.
Okay. Mr. Bryan?
A couple of issues with the way it's phrased right now for me. I don't think that the idea of the phrasing is ideal in the sense that the way I read it, it sounds that it's very directed just towards a DOC option. I'm not saying that that's what it has to be. I do agree that if the language is in there that says, this is a design document, preliminary engineering report, or engineering report with a phased approach that incorporates the expectation that we will be connecting with JRWA water and that we should look for the maximum cost savings in that plan. That to me makes more sense in the way it's phrased right now. And the concern it provides as it is kind of just leeway for a particular direction. And given that we're still in the process of working out some of those details, I have some information that's missing in the whole picture. I wouldn't want the county staff to think that that is the only choice there, and I wouldn't want the engineers to think that that's the only choice. So if the language has changed, and I have some thoughts on maybe how we can change it, but if it was changed to incorporate that sort of component, or if the staff says yes, we understand that, then I'm comfortable with moving forward with this. I think it is critical to the long-term fiscal health of the county, that we have a viable form of creating an economic engine in this county. And Zion's Crossroads is that location for the county. So if we want to get out of increasing tax rates, we're going to have to make an investment. And as I've said before, you know, this county to date has invested almost nothing into economic development. And we're seeing the results of that. When you compare what we look like in relationship to other counties that have some form of economic engine in place, we're not well positioned to have a sustainable tax rate. So I'm definitely for it, but I am strongly of the opinion that DOC is not a sufficient quantity of water, and that the time and opportunity for the county to partner and act for bringing in James River water is now, and I don't want to limit ourselves.
So you want to put the James River water part of, do
I'm
you
just
have
that,
the
that,
language
that,
for that?
I'm just saying that the,
you
can't,
DOC.
The
you can't.
Language, yeah, the yes. language,
all right, what's
you
your
know,
language
of the engineering report say that it's A, phased, and B, that it's anticipating water from the James River, and that it is looking for the best solution. So, for example, when we were talking to KKR, or is it?
RK&K.
RK&K, thank you, I'm sorry. I'm dyslexic. One of the questions that we asked was, you know, would phasing, would the possibility of getting a temporary permit from the VDH for using the water tower, is that an option? I don't have an answer to that right now. As long as that's explored.
From VDH, for using whose water tower?
The water tower at Louisa County. We talked a little bit about that.
Okay.
The answer was we didn't know, and that's fair. It may be that we can or cannot. It was just something that I think should be part of that, because if we can phase, and if we are negotiating with Louisa County, and we're phasing for maximum savings, I think that makes a lot of sense. I totally agree that we need to move forward, as Mr. Sheridan says, with some form, and as you've said, with form of pipes in the ground, and I agree that the DOC sewer is the best option available to us at present. So there's no question that we have to run pipelines to DOC. The question is, what is the extent of those pipelines?
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
The RK&K study clearly showed in water usage large developments, residential developments in that water use. And the troubling part to me was that our prior ROI studies, all of them showed the same thing. And none of them take into account, let's say you've, and it's actually the size of another Spring Creek when you have 2,000 homes. And we all know that residential water use is the only viable way to get an immediate return on your investment as far as water usage goes, because most industrial uses are never going to use the amount of water that was mentioned in the RK&K study. Now, that being said, if we had a 2,000-unit subdivision, and a future board could grab at that low-hanging fruit as a way of paying for water and immediately holding taxes down for a short period of time. And I'm just saying the possibilities there. I'm not saying that it would happen, but we don't know. And but that doesn't take into account public safety, the increase in Sheriff's Department budget, because they're going to need more deputies if you build a lot on that end of the county. Emergency services, you're going to need a fire department down there, especially ambulance. And we already have, at times, a 45-minute wait for ambulance calls out that way if they're not taken by Louisa for us. And then we're not taking into account county manpower in public works. We're going to have to hire crew to maintenance on the water system. And that sewer system in DOC isn't going to handle the entire project. We're eventually going to have to build another one, and that's up in the air, and how we work that out with Louisa down the road. There's a lot of open-ended questions here.
I'm just looking for a quick answer.
You want him to answer everything that you said?
No, just what I said. I threw him a couple questions.
Yeah. Just Bob, what happened to you? What happened to the push that we needed to do DLC? We had to, what? How? Wow, the change right now. What happened?
Who changed?
You did. You made a complete 360 degree change from 24 hours, probably. I don't know where this 2,000 housing is coming from.
Well, that is in the RKNK study.
And all of that.
You have to read the study. It's in there.
But.
It is in there.
Yeah. It's not saying it's coming, no. Mr. Allenbrock. It's just laying out the possibility.
No, no, the water usage is in there. And the ROI studies, it's in there.
Right.
Of course we modeled it into the ROI studies.
I'm just saying what happens if you do have someone, and we've had this conversation.
Yeah.
If someone does grab that, and it's tempting.
Right.
Especially if you're looking down 8 years or so down.
Anything is possible.
Well, you asked me a question.
It could.
There you go.
You know, but right now, I want to do, you know how you would change your language.
I have some suggestions. I don't know.
What are your suggestions? And then let the our attorney listen to it and our county administrator.
I don't like the word.
You're going to change it here now?
Look at the.
Change things now? How do you talk?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't like the word, and further direct the county to begin the process of negotiating for the final design of the infrastructure, describing the recommendations named above, and begin developing policies and procedures. That section on the final seems to me that it should be a phased design.
Okay,
as opposed to a final design.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you go further down where you say this action will lead to.
Don't start.
Which? Okay. A phase design.
Would be better suited to get through the budget and then do this.
That's what I think. That's where I am.
I don't know. I don't want to wait 2 days on it.
Yeah. We don't want to have to wait 6 weeks.
And then come back to it.
Yeah.
You're not going to change anything with this budget.
No.
You're not going to change anything as far as this budget goes.
I'm just saying that. My only thought was, this is for down the road, correct?
This is starting, as soon as we get a contractor hired to start working on a design. You can't build anything unless you have a design.
That's all, and then
similar to what JRWA has.
Yeah, and we make decisions after the design.
Well, it's quite expensive. It's an expensive move.
Look, I mean,
go ahead.
If the county believes, I mean, you know, basically, there's five of us here. Three of us believe that this is a losing proposition. Well, then let's just stop wasting our time.
That's right.
Okay. But I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of people that believe that this is the one opportunity that we have, and the timing is here in order to do that, and the planning is here.
Right.
Okay.
And
it's going to cost money, and it is absolutely.
For how long?
It's going to cost money for 20 years.
20
it's going to
years.
Cost money for.
When are you going to break even?
According to the studies that we've done in the past, anywhere from 5 to 8 years.
Never happened.
Well, maybe it won't, maybe it will, but I can guarantee you what will continue to happen is that we'll continue to raise taxes.
And we continue to go in more debt, too, all the way along.
But debt, you know, and I don't know if a business that grows that doesn't operate with some levels of debt.
Not with cost, though, for
years. Not when they're in debt as much as we are.
What do you mean? Google X project is spending billions of dollars to put balloons in the air that may or may not work.
Yeah, but look what the resources they have.
Well,
I mean, you have resources like that. You're not on the cliff like we are.
We
right
have
now.
A resource. We do have.
We're
a resource.
On the cliff.
No, we have a resource. It's called the James River, okay, and it's called Zion's Crossroads. Those are major resources to our county. We have a highway that drives right through it. There are counties that would die to have those resources. Okay,
yes.
We're squandering those resources away because we refuse to make a minimal investment in this county towards economic development. And I mean a minimal. I mean 3% of the county? And really, we're sitting here and saying we can't do that? Did you buy your house with all cash? Do most Americans buy their house with all cash to begin with? Or do they make an investment into their home? Do you
That's
buy your
their
car with
money.
All cash?
It's not the taxpayers'
money. Those people
money.
Don't do it all that.
There's a lot of difference.
No, the taxpayers
people are more willing to use taxpayers' money than they are their own.
No.
Yes, they are.
No, I don't think
I've
it's...
I've seen it time
I think
every time.
Misuse of the taxpayers' money is equally as erosive as, you know, as doing nothing. I mean, in other words, to do the wrong thing is misusing the taxpayers' money. Absolutely. Okay? If we don't recognize that this county competes with other counties, that it has a responsibility to its citizens to provide quality core services, to provide a good place to live, and to do so in a competitive way with the surrounding counties, well, then, you know, people are going to move out of this area. They're going to say this county doesn't have its act together.
They're going to move out because we're going to have a 93.5 cent.
No, they're not going to move out because
that's
of that.
Very long.
Okay?
Well, again, they are. I've heard too many people talk about it.
Well, you know what? You know, the idea that the rate is the problem, and we've gone to great efforts, the county's gone to great efforts to show that it isn't about the rate.
It okay. is.
Well, you know why the rate is in part low?
Yeah, I know why it's high.
Why?
Because we have too much debt. That's
okay.
why.
Okay. So when did the county when did the county
we
start
can argue
when did the
all
county start
this.
Saving money to build a high school? When did the county start doing that? You've been here 24 years. When did you vote to set aside
Never.
Money to build a new school?
Never.
When did you vote to do that? Because if you didn't do that, then you knew you had to borrow money to do it. Right? So don't say that debt is bad when you planned on borrowing money to begin with.
I didn't plan on borrowing any.
So you just thought that you just thought that people would live in 50-year-old buildings?
With cash.
50-year-old buildings? Pleasant Grove is different than a high school that has to house 2,000 people. Okay, what about this building
here? At a cost of $82 million.
Did we pay cash for this building here?
Well, there's no point.
No, but the point of saying that debt, we can't take on debt to do the right thing is
insane. Once you get to a certain point, you quit digging.
What,
and we continue to dig.
And that point is what? That point is to do nothing?
Sometimes it's better to do nothing
okay.
than to move on in the wrong direction.
And the wrong
I'm
direction.
I'm not going to argue about that anymore.
Okay, that's right. Because there's five of us here. We don't have to talk about it. Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's
at the bottom line is, yes, this is going to cost money. You know, that's the bottom
this
line.
This whole thing with water is a very emotional thing for me. Because the Booker family has been involved in the water decisions for 24 years.
And what was
my husband was on this board for 16, trying to get economic development and get water from the James. I've been on here 8. So we needed to move forward, and we need to get a vote on this, and I want to see infrastructure started. We get right up to the time to make this decision, and then we fall apart.
This is
and
exact,
if we fall
I may
apart...
Regret this. I may regret this comment, but the last meeting we had, Mr. Ellenberg, you were ready to vote it through
that's
that
right.
night. What is the main thing that's gotten you to turn around? I mean,
totally
you've absolutely said, let's pass it tonight,
mm-hmm.
right now.
Yeah, I've talked to you about it. You
okay.
understand.
So we cannot keep, if we can't do this,
were you asking
we can't do the agreement with Louis, we might as well just forget.
Were you asking a question? Because I can answer it in 4 words. I won't be long.
Okay.
I told you I won't.
That's why
I want to see where we're at in FY16 budget numbers before I can move at another 3 cents guaranteed on FY17's budget, because I already envision a couple more cents on a couple other projects going into FY17's budget, and we're looking at and we're staring a dollar down at $1 right between the eyes, and not, you know, the probability of me being here next year is 50-50 in my mind right now, maybe. So I don't want to do that to somebody else. you know, setting someone else up. I just really want to see, if we're talking 2 weeks, if we're talking 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I think we're going to be pretty firmed up on the 11th. Historically, we've always done real well just before St. Patrick's Day. And I see a number with an 8 in it. I'm talking.
I'm
stop.
He's on word number two, Ms. Booker.
You said 4 words.
I'm done. If you want to stop me from saying what's on my mind, that's insane.
Stop.
Just because it doesn't agree with you.
I
know you want to be in the 90s no matter what.
Do you want to do any change in
wording? I think we should table this for right now. I think we should just table this.
I think that's what Mr. Ullenbrook just said. Well,
there's a difference between rejecting.
I'm not being...
No, you're
not.
You're backing up again.
Not backing up anything.
You're turning around flips one more time.
We're just not agreeing with you.
And it doesn't make any sense.
Because it doesn't agree with
me. Well, it doesn't agree with me.
So, Mike, what are your concerns here? I mean, because here's the bottom line. It doesn't matter whether the tax rate's 89 cents or 93 cents. You know, because the budget needs to be met. Either we're going to shortchange schools, we're going to shortchange the police department, we're going to shortchange social services, or we're going to, you know, vote for a sustainable tax rate. That's not going to change anything.
Okay? That's another discussion.
That's another discussion. I'm just saying, you know, that there is a number, whether the rate is 89 cents and the property tax rate goes up 30 cents.
That's a whole other discussion, right?
But here's the thing. At the end of the day, you know, we're going to vote on this budget and we're going to spend whatever it is, $67 or $68 million, whatever the total budget number is, give or take, and we still have to move forward with water, right? Now, my concern isn't about doing DOC. My concern is exactly what we're seeing here right now, which is that we are penny wise and pound foolish, and that we don't recognize that there's one opportunity to deal with Louisa County, and that opportunity is here. And if we shortchange ourselves, we will be shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, and we will be regretting it for a long time. The same way that we talk now about how we regret that we didn't do something with the JRWA 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we're going to be doing the same thing again because we didn't act decisively. All right? And we need to act decisively about water. There's no question we're going to have to do this.
We don't need to take
There's no other place to get sewer right now, period. So we're going to have to do this. The question is whether we get you know, water there or not, and whether we phase it. That's what it basically boils down to. And Louisa County, if they're going to move up to Zion's Crossroads right now, this is the time that we're going to be negotiating with them. So we should have that plan in place. I'm for having the plan engineered. I'm just concerned with the language, and I'm just concerned with the fact that, you know, it sounds very DOC-centric, and it's not incorporating the fact that Louisa County and the JRWA pipeline are coming up here. I think it needs to incorporate that.
Okay,
Mr. Bryant.
Go ahead.
Well, let me tell you, it is 100% DOC-centric. Mm-hmm. It's intended to be 100% DOC-centric, and not because staff thinks that's the best option, although we've been advocating for that. We'll do whatever you say. This is 100% DOC-centric because that's the recommendations that came out of the PER, and the 7175, 7979, 7111 are what it includes here. We can't say to an engineer, hey, figure out a design for us. We have to give them very specific on what kind of design we want and where we want connections to be and where we're going to hook up to. And while we can say, we think we might have water coming from this way, so make sure you incorporate that in design, this design 100% absolutely includes water from any other source. But again, if you are saying do this but only build the sewer pipe from DOC to Route 15 and don't build the water line because we'll get water, our JRWA water from Louisa, and then we'll build whatever pipeline we want, but we won't have to spend the whole dollars on the pipeline, that's a whole different dynamic. If that's what you want, then we'll get the design for that system. But I can't back into a design.
Yeah, I would think that the engineering component would be able to incorporate some of those ideas. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean that they're chosen at this point in time, but they can say timeline will be determined by the engineering component, right? So I imagine, correct me if I'm wrong.
Timeline will be determined by us.
Right, but they're still going to have to spend a number of months putting this together, right?
90 to 120 days, probably we'd have a design.
There's a good probability that 90 to 120 days from now, we'll have a pretty good idea of where Louisa County is, right? And where Fluvanna County is with Louisa County. Would hope so, okay? And so if those timelines coincide, then that gives us the opportunity to say, okay, should we relook at it from this perspective? If you're saying that there's no way that that can happen right now, then I would say we shouldn't do this until we have some of those answers. But if you're saying that, you know, it is DOC-centric in the sense that it is looking to incorporate the DOC for sewer and potentially water, and that, you know, it could be designed to tie into the JRWA, I'm very comfortable with that.
Well, it absolutely,
and I will think that that's what we would task the engineers to look at.
Absolutely designed such that you connect here, you run them here, you decide how, and maybe you don't go down 15, but we'd have the price for that. And how do you connect to JRWA water? That absolutely is 100% there. We're not going to design a system that couldn't take subsequent water or sewer sources. I don't share your optimism that we're going to have some kind of plan in the next 90 or 120 days in concert with Louisa, because there's too many things involved in that. What I don't want to do, and we'll do whatever you all decide, but what I don't recommend doing is that we create a design on a hope and a wish and a prayer without some specificity. And I think we need more specificity.
Well,
the only
potential is here's the way I see it. Correct me if I'm wrong. The only potential is pipelines are, you know, pretty close to arriving at the same time or being built. Both systems could be built essentially at the same time.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. If the timeline is such that both are at the same time, then the question for Fluvanna County is: should we invest in the pipeline and the water ultimately to DOC at, you know, 75,000 gallons and potentially an additional $1.5-2 million for that pipeline? If water is arriving from JRWA at the same time, aside from redundancy, I don't see some real benefit to having that particular piece of pipe there. But redundancy, hey, I'd sell redundancy all day long, so I'm not arguing against redundancy.
I'm assuming
it's just a very small amount of water. And that water is not going to, that water is not going to be the full plan for Zion's Crossroads. And that's what I'm very concerned about is that, without laying the groundwork for making sure that we're looking at DOC plus, that this just becomes DOC. And I'm very concerned about that because it's a disaster.
Regardless of what you all think,
right,
there's never been one time that a staff member on Fluvanna County staff has ever advocated for DOC by itself, ever. It's just preposterous, because we know that long term that is a growth corridor, and sooner or later we'll need more than that water. It's never been recommended, and I don't recommend it now. I just recommend that you sooner or later are going to have to figure out the real cost of putting pipes in the ground along 250 and down 15, the real cost of a tower, the real cost of, okay, let's say we only got a mile of a pipe instead of 3 miles of pipe, 7 miles of sewer pipe. What's the connection cost here? What's the potential cost of water we're going to get from our JRWA water treatment through Louisa, and how much that would affect rates in the area? That's what this is designed to do.
And the timelines behind that.
Right. And the timelines behind it. But if you think we're going to be negotiating a variety of other things for the next 6 months, I wouldn't jump on and do this now. There's too many unanswered questions.
Maybe I'm wrong here, but I don't think that knowing what those timelines and those costs are preparing that precludes, you know, let's say that's ready in 90 days and we're 90 days away from finishing or 120 days away from finishing our other negotiations. As long as the report includes that idea of potential ways that it can be phased and includes the hookups, you know, the assumption that it's going to go in with the JRWA, I think that's great. Otherwise, I think we're limiting the scope of that report, and we may end up redoing some of that work.
I'm not sure we can do it as what you're asking. I'll have to get engineer. I mean, we can ask Mr. Stevens; he may know, but we need design engineers here to tell us that too, because I'm not sure that we can make it that to that level of detail. We're talking about putting some pipes in the ground along a certain road. We know what that costs.
Right.
We're talking about having the ability to connect to any other water source that would be appropriate that you all think is reasonable that you want to, whether it's a ground source, Albemarle Sewer and Water Authority, Louisa County Water Authority, or our own JRWA water that's been treated by through some plant. Those absolutely will be considered in wherever the connections would have to happen. But I'm not sure I can.
So the only difference is whether or not you're building a tower now, or whether or not you're.
Well, how long, how far the pipe's going to go? Whether you're building a tower now? I mean, all those kinds of things.
No. But I mean, I'm assuming that. I mean, we know that we have to go from Zion's Crossroads all the way down to DOC to do sewer.
That's a given, right?
So we've got RKK saying that the potential cost of, you know, the water component of the water pipeline was $1.8 million, depending on the length of the pipe and so on. They said that the cost of the tower was this. All that's behind that is, you know, phasing. We will need to have our own tower. We know that. If the report includes, and Mr. Stevens, I know, has done a lot of work, and I'm not questioning his work, mm-hmm. but I would think that part of that engineering report would validate his assumptions, right? And so if the report comes in and says, you know, hey, based on these assumptions, we've got this, and let's say we got a pass from the VDH that says, yes, for, you know, a year and a half period of time, you can do this. Well, then does that allow that phasing or not? You know, and what's the cost of doing it that way? To me, it seems like they can provide that kind of flexibility in the report.
It is, but you already have that. That's what was given to you when the preliminary engineering report was done. That's the precursor to a formal design. That's why you got the PER, and the PER considered every one of those alternatives and options. And I don't think we're going to be able to go to VDH and say, hey, can you allow us to use Louisa's tower? That may be a problem. We have to go to VDH eventually, but you got to actually maybe get some agreement with Louisa before we even consider going to VDH.
Of course.
And you know, I don't know what their design capacities are. I'm assuming there is some capacity remaining, but that's LCWA. And the existing tower uses LCWA and well water.
Right.
And I'm not sure that we can mix those two together and use their pressure without having the legal problems that have already been specified by Louisa. And I don't know how, and I don't know any other way to get the JRWA water to Zion Crossroads. To Mr. Weaver's point, we're doing two water projects. Okay, let's not do two water projects. Just do JRWA. JRWA, in its current form, gets you absolutely nothing. It always has to be JRWA plus because you got to have a distribution system. You have to have a tower. You have to have, you know, pumps. You have to have, you know, connections. And so in any case, even if the JRWA water comes up, goes to Ferncliff, we pay for treatment through Louisa's plant. It gets piped down to Zion Crossroads. When it comes across the Fluvanna Louisa line, you got to have something to put it in. You got to run it someplace. You got to have sewer for wherever you're going to run it. And the only sewer source that I know of now is DOC. And to put a pipeline from Zion Crossroads all the way to DOC in the ground without at the same time putting a water pipeline in next to it just is got to be more costly.
You would think, right?
Yeah.
I
just know that's a fact.
Well, they said that according to them, they figured it was about 10-15% more costly.
Right. Yeah, and I know that's a fact. But it's
I get that. I'm not arguing that. You know,
he said he had to dig two trenches anyway because you couldn't.
Right. You can't put them on top of each other. You can't put them in the same trench. But it's the engineering work that goes out there. If you've got a crew out there digging,
right,
and then 2 years later you want to send another crew out, well, now you're starting over on costs.
And you've heard me say I'm okay with that.
Understand.
I'm okay with that. The problem is, if the excuse is, well, we just spent $1.5 million doing this, and so therefore we're not going to do this over here,
mm-hmm.
to me that's a problem. That's where mm-hmm. I, you know, have an issue. Because we have to do this over here.
It's all fine with me. The staff is ready to do whichever direction you want to go, but I don't think, you know what the staff's recommendations are.
Okay.
Okay.
We've listened to everyone.
Well, so
added some the word. Is there anything else? Can we vote on this tonight?
Are we gonna those other recommendations? But they shouldn't.
Did they? So, I want us to vote on it tonight.
So
people want us to vote on this.
Tonight. Yes, I think it.
One note, ma'am. This one right here. If the document says, including the provisions of 7.2, does that, of recommendation 7.2, does that make sense?
7.3.
7.2 and 7.3.
7.2, 7. I mean, actually, that's one of the things my objections is, it doesn't incorporate, I mean, it seemed to me that it was picking just certain items.
Well, take those out and just say a water design for Zion Crossroads.
Well, then we're really voting on nothing but a dream.
No, you're talking about a design, and then you're going to have to fund it if you want to build it.
What would you want to take out of the recommendations in Section 7, and why? And maybe the phrasing is simply not that we're voted. And again, this is one of my concerns around the phrasing is it sounds as if we're saying this is all we're doing with Arcane K, and we're done with it, versus, you know,
we are done with Arcane K.
Well, no, I'm not suggesting that we're not. I'm just saying that the recommendations that are in that, you know, that either this board or future boards don't look at that and say, yeah, these were still valid recommendations. There is a midterm plan. There is a long-term plan. Mm-hmm. There is a need for alternative waste treatment. You know, all of those things, I think, are important recommendations. So unless there's, you know, unless staff is saying we don't agree with this, if we're making the recommendation of yes, we're moving forward, we're making a big loud statement to the county, we're moving forward with this, then I think we should do it in a manner that says, okay, we're doing the study, we're assuming it's going to be DOC plus, and we're assuming that we're going to need, you know, an infrastructure that is forward thinking and isn't, you know, just looking at I've got 125,000 gallons of sewer today, you know, that we're going to have to create the ordinances, that we're going to have to do all those other things in order to have, you know, a viable water and sewer system in the county.
Okay, so how about this? We have to change the language there, but
so the only thing I would say is a phase design and infrastructure, describe the recommendations above, and begin developing policies and procedures for the operation of a new water and sewer system for board of supervisors review and approval. Was there anything after that?
No.
I personally think it should. Well, I mean, I guess it
says we're
going
to change this much stuff.
Then we've only changed one line so far.
Let's get it. Let's see if we can get it right. Get it where we can vote on it. Anything else? Does that take care of it? Are we ready to make the motion?
Okay. Well, let's clean this up before
clean
we do
it up.
Thank you. Okay, so this is a possible draft. Now, remember, we're going to, when the final report from RKNK comes, we're going to bring that to you and ask you to adopt that study. But nothing's going to change from what you heard before, but they have to come back with the formal, final, whatever. So we'll have a motion for you in that. But this one says that move the Board of Supervisors direct staff to develop a Zion Crossroads water and sewer system based on recommendations from the PER. And further direct the county minister to begin the process for negotiating a phased design of the infrastructure described in the PER recommendations and to begin developing policies and procedures for operation of the new water and sewer systems for the Board of Supervisors review and approval. Now, again, this is only an engineering design. The engineering design will take into account any reasonably possible options and will design such that it can connect to something else later or phase build of certain things that could be phased. You're not going to be able to phase the building of the sewer pipe because you're going to have to go from DOC at least to 250. We could phase it not going down 15, but you got to go at least along that way because, I mean, you're going to have to do that. And then they can tell you what the cost differential is of putting water pipes at the same time or not.
What's the cost of the study?
In the ballpark of $300K. Is that what the 300?
Okay, do we have anything else we need to?
There's no turning back.
All this means is that you've got a study. It means you've got a design sitting on the shelf. Mm-hmm. If for the next 10 years you don't do anything with it,
right,
you're going to have to spend some money to buff it up because there will be things different in 10 years. If you use it in the next 2 years, well, then you're pretty good to go. But you can't sit on the shelf like some of the studies we've got that are 20 years old. I'm sorry, you got to kind of almost start over at that point. Two or three years down the line, it can be polished off. This PER from RK&K is going to be a good study for us for the next few years to use as their reference.
Okay.
But sooner or later, you're going to have to design anyway, but it's up to you all.
Okay. Are you ready to make a motion?
Yeah.
Okay. Motion. Go ahead.
I move that the Board of Supervisors direct staff to develop the Zion's Crossroads water and sewer system based on the recommendations from the preliminary engineering and water and wastewater services to Zion's Crossroads planning area PER report prepared by Rummel, Klepper, and Call, RK&K consulting engineers, and dated January 2015. And further direct the county administrator to begin the process for negotiating a phased design of the infrastructure described in the PER recommendations and to begin developing policies and procedures for the operation of the new water and sewer system for the Board of Supervisors review and approval.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
It has been moved by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Thank you. Okay. Next, we will go to the confirmation of the declaration of the consentment of local emergency declaration. Ms. Cheryl.
Ms. Wilkins is training this week, and okay. This one's complicated, and I'm turning it over to the county attorney because I'm not sure what to do with it with all the machinations that happened today.
Unless we have to do another one.
Well, that's kind of the problem.
If you look at the language of this resolution that you got here, the first problem was that there was a typo in the original resolution you had. It was supposed to be February the 16th, and your mm-hmm. the one you adopted was February the 17th.
Yeah, because right. it went over the date.
It corrects okay. that. Mm-hmm. Then the second thing it does that it terminates the declaration of emergency as of last Friday. So you're doing that. You're ratifying what the staff has done.
Okay. And,
now, the issue is, do you want to terminate it as of the 27th, which is what was proposed, or do you want to take account of what's likely to happen tomorrow and terminate it on
because
Friday?
This was formulated before mm-hmm. we knew the new weather forecast,
right.
And so.
Right.
Now, one way to do it would be to change in the last paragraph where it says effective retroactively as of midnight February 27 and say effective March
6.
Mm-hmm. Midnight.
Midnight on March 6th.
Okay. Because it's not supposed to get above 32 for Friday.
Well, you say midnight on March 7th, make it terminate on Saturday morning.
Okay. All right. Is anyone ready to make that motion and change that date?
I move to confirm the decision to correct the typographical day error for the local emergency declaration within Cleveland County in response to a significant winter storm event, making the declaration to be effective 4 p.m. on February 16, 2015, and to be ended effective as of midnight March 6, 2015.
All right.
We're going to
make
it
March 7.
March 7, 2015. Okay, let's make it Saturday.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Thank you. Presentations. We have Crofton Park proposal. Jason Smith, Director of Parks and Recreation, and Mr. Marvin Moss, Louvanna County Historical Society.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you guys for your time. I'm going to talk briefly about the development phase and the opportunity that we have. The area that we're talking about, we've got the Lake Monticello Dam right there. Crofton Boat Ramp is on the other side of the river. This was a land swap. The dark blue shaded areas were it's a land swap between the county and the LMAO association with Lake Monticello in 2011, I believe. Recently, the Heritage Trail Foundation voted at the end of January to provide some funding to pay a firm in Charlottesville, LPDA, who we've worked with in the past, the county, to come up with a site plan, if you will, basically how we would use this area. The area is about 80 acres along the Rivanna. It's mostly floodplain, so there's really nothing that can be done with it. The aqua treatment facility.
Building-wise,
correct. With that, I've asked Mr. Moss to be here to talk a little bit about what the foundation has discussed, and then we'll take your questions.
Good evening, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, I'm here actually to give you some money.
Oh.
Or at least to give you some service. Wow.
Beware of
beware.
Yes, be very cautious.
Bragging gifts, beware.
And now my idea tonight is to simply keep you informed about what we are proposing to do. This land is terrific. It has historic, the second oldest village in Flavanna County, Bernardsburg, which is spelled all kinds of different ways, but that's the one which is just below the dam. It has two of the most magnificent locks along the Rivanna River, both of which were put on the National Register of Historic Places back in 1999 by LMOA. The Historical Society didn't even know they were doing that. Now, we were delighted when we found out that they did, which makes it a lot easier to raise money because you have two structures there that are on the National Register. What we're proposing to do, and this has been very carefully coordinated with the county through Jason and also the Heritage Trail Board and also the Executive Committee of the Historical Society, is to come up with a sort of menu of things that we would like LPDA, whom we would hire, when I say we, the Heritage Trail, with our $5,000, to put in. And that's why I wanted you to see this before we start doing this, because this is your land. It belongs to the people of the county. So the things we would do would be hiking and biking recreation trails, promote historic county education through a series of signs along the trail, discussing the river navigation system, history of the abandoned Bernardsburg, and there are elements there. There are foundations and some coverage of the flora and fauna of the park, safe access to the park, preferably from a location that does not require an easement from Aqua, Virginia. The current trail that's there, which was put in, Mr. Len Gardner sitting in the audience here, he helped build that trail many years ago, and it goes through the land owned by Aqua Virginia. So in order to legally keep that, you would have to get some kind of easement from Aqua Virginia. So we'd be looking at access to it that doesn't involve an easement from Aqua. It would have a minimum of public facilities, such as restrooms, perhaps to porta-johns. The concept of the park would be integrated, and this is very important, with the new recreational trail committee proposed by LMOA, and we've already talked to the people on that committee, so that if there's any way that we can hook up whatever Lake Monticello does in terms of new trails within the boundaries of the lake with this one here on the new county land, it would certainly be advantageous to both the people of the lake and the county itself. The other thing that we would ask them to do is to look at the fact that so much of the historic fabric, including the two locks, lies in the floodplain. The concept plan would have to include suggestions for maintaining those trails, historic sites lying in the floodplain. So those are sort of the things that we would like to hire this expert to come in and do, then present to the county. We're not asking you to proceed with this. We would like to present you with a concept plan that you could proceed at some future date and would also provide the basis for these two nonprofits to raise money for the project itself. Any questions?
Just a comment and a question. Mm-hmm. I continue to admire what you do for the county and,
thank
and
you.
For recreation purposes and historic purposes. How much is it going to cost the county down the road?
I have no idea, and that's one of the things the concept plan would come up with.
That would be my only concern in it.
I'm not asking you to approve anything tonight.
No.
Yeah.
And once again, my first statement stands. The time you put in is admirable. So thank you.
I would say at the Crofton subdivision, they also have more land, and I would wonder how far that the LMOA land is away from ours that we might be able to connect.
That I don't know. We'd have to explore that. I don't know. And I've not walked all of this for a long time, so I need to get out there and start walking it again.
Right now would be a good time to do it before the ticks.
Yes. Last time I was out there was in August, and it was not pleasant.
Do you think that this would ever be an area where LMOA and the heritage people would be totally responsible for it, and it would not be a counter responsibility? Do you think it would be self-supportive,
right,
that we don't, there'll be no cost, that we don't have our staff have to go out and cut the weeds back? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's going to be on county property. The county,
pardon?
If it's going to be on county property, the county will need to anticipate
Some responsibility.
Yes.
Can it be responsibility without dollars connected?
Well, I think they're
I'm not sure what that means.
There are really two questions here. One is the.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are really two questions here. The first is money to what when you have a concept plan, it's up to you all to decide what's to be done with the land. So then the question is, how do you raise money to do that? Well,
right.
We do. The Historical Society and Heritage Trail do this all the time. We're in the process of doing it right now for the Farm Museum.
Okay.
So I don't see that as a problem. I just point out that the Heritage Trail has a very detailed memo of agreement with Fluvanna County about the maintenance of the Heritage Trail on Pleasant Grove. So that you have already have a model for that. I don't anticipate that staffing would be involved in managing these trails or things like that, but as the county attorney said, you know, there are always liability issues with these kinds of
when we did that swap, I mean, we knew what the terms were and the possibility, and we did that with our eyes wide open.
Well, it was a smart swap.
Yeah, so now you all are trying to move forward with that.
So
you're just bringing us information today.
This is a marvelous opportunity, and what we're proposing to do is to give you a blueprint about how to go about this in the future.
Right.
And that's all we're doing.
It's got something that I've talked about before. Is we could, using the rivers as a draw, as an economic draw.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I brought up the area behind the, oh, shoot.
Can you call it Cherokee?
Yeah, thank you.
The what?
Go Indian Cherokee subdivision. Cherokee section. They have about 12, 20 acres back there that would be a great, and I looked at it as being possibly a great tube flow to come from.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 miles.
Yeah.
And instead of trying to go 6 miles, which would take you forever and a day.
Yeah.
Go right by my house, Duncan.
And the last thing I would say is that you have 43% of the county's population right there within a shouting distance of this park. So if you can do really something there that's attractive to them as well as everybody else, mm-hmm. it would be very helpful to everyone.
Maybe you get the natural, the gardeners.
Yeah. The naturalist, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Were you aware, the back of my property has a lockkeeper's cabin. The chimney's the only thing left.
Oh, I didn't know that.
The University of Virginia was doing, maybe 8 or 10 years ago, was doing some digging with little teaspoons. What do they call that?
Yeah.
I want to go out there with a load of it. No one's been out there since. It's still all marked off from where UVA just left it, but it's the old lockkeeper's cabin, and what's left above ground is a chimney.
Yeah, there are lots of great historic elements in that area, in that entire area of the Rivanna.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well,
thank you all very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. All right.
Some staff comments.
Yes.
First of all, great work. I mean, on lots of things, our county's benefited greatly. In this case, the three things that I'm concerned with are: if you do a study and then it sits on a shelf for 10 years, then you may have to do it again because things have changed. If you do a study and you get pressured then to go forward with it, there will be a significant amount of staff effort that will have to be done to maintain an area that the county owns, regardless of how many volunteers we get, and that would have to be acknowledged. And the final point is, we are not willing to accept a design from LPDA, and I'll have to talk to Mr. Moss about that, but the staff is not going to recommend that you accept a design from LPDA, and we'll have to find another way to do that. The design would be great, but I'm worried about the shelf life of it if the board is not going to commit resources to go forward on in the next 5 or 10 years.
We'd be glad to talk to you about that.
Yeah,
okay. So you all are talking about that.
This is information.
That would be our decision.
Okay.
The board's going to have to make that decision.
Yes.
That's our
decision.
So that
will come back to us, right?
You may have their recommendation.
Well, yes, it's going to have to because just because someone wants to do a study, I don't want you to feel obligated 3 months from now to accept the results of the study and put it on the shelf as what we want to do. That still needs to be worked on with Mr. Moss and staff to kind of talk through this. There are some important concerns. While it's a valuable area, I don't want to lose what's there. We have a lot of projects on our plate. And if you want to extend resources to us to be able to do more, fine, but we can't continue to do more with less. This would be a stretch.
I would just say that both of the nonprofits are very sensitive to that reality.
Mm-hmm.
That
and I don't disagree with that at all. We've been very good working relations, and it's really good, fruitful things we got for our county.
To look into it.
This one's a stretch,
okay.
too.
That's great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I was just bragging about you, Mr. Morris, with the Rivanna Water Basin Commission, all of that. You have come in sometime and talked to us about that. Okay, our next presentation is subdivision requirements. Mr. Jason Stewart, Planning and Zoning Administrator.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the board. I'm just here tonight to talk about approved subdivisions and roads. At this time of year, many of y'all may be getting questions from citizens about why their road's not being plowed.
Yes.
And things of that nature. So I hope this may explain a little bit and detail some of the problems that with some of these subdivisions.
You have solutions, too?
You have solutions.
We have solutions.
The board has solutions.
Do you have recommended solutions? I'll put it another way.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Just a brief overview of under the provisions of the Zoning and Subdivision Ordinance, major subdivisions, which are subdivisions over 5 lots, require roads to be improved to VDOT standards and taken into the system. The basis of this is in Section 19-8-1A of the subdivision ordinance, which requires roads to be brought to VDOT standards. and Section 2217-11 of the zoning ordinance, which requires, except as otherwise expressly provided in the chapter, every parcel land shall abut a road dedicated to public use and maintained by the Virginia Department of Transportation.
And that is really important. So that red one on the bottom is really important.
All right, go back to it, please.
Every parcel of land, my property with a house on it, shall abut a road dedicated to public use and maintained by the VDOT.
But that's not true.
No, it is true.
I mean, but it's not a fact.
It is true, and it is a fact.
It's part of state code.
Hold on.
There's all kinds of unimproved roads.
Hold on. Except as otherwise expressly provided in this chapter. There are provisions in the zoning ordinance permitting private roads, and of course anything that has an existing road is non-conforming.
Plus we have subdivisions that where the builder went bankrupt or whatever.
That's not an exception. That's part of this issue right now. That in those cases, and this is coming up, and I don't know how much detail you want me to get into it, those are currently in violation of the zoning ordinance.
Right. That's correct.
We'll cover all those as we go.
Yeah.
So this,
Mr. Ellenberg, this applies to major subdivisions, which by our ordinances are required to be brought into the system. Are you done looking at that, Ms. Parker?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Here's a map that staff made. I want to thank Mr. Lindsay for coming up with this. It's the blue areas show our subdivisions that currently have unapproved roads that aren't brought into the VDOT system. You can see they're scattered about the county in different locations.
And there's quite a number of them up there. We have about 45 or 50 different subdivisions not finished, but all those ones in blue are subdivisions that were approved but don't have VDOT approved roads yet.
But they have people living there.
Yes, and they were approved as public roads when the subdivision was approved.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a list of subdivisions with unapproved streets currently. You can see approximately 26 subdivisions and about 57 streets that haven't been brought into the system.
You had 26 circled there.
Yeah. Just Taylor Ridge. What?
What is that circle?
There are 26 subdivisions.
It's just highlighting the number that we have out there.
They contain 57 roads that have not been appropriately brought into the VDOT system yet.
Right.
I thought in that Antioch Glen, it had been brought in by the state.
Do you know if it has Steve? Antioch Glen.
Because I thought we named them all.
There's names on them.
We put names on them. Came through the board, as I recall.
All the streets, even the ones that don't have names on them. In all the subdivisions, there's names on the streets. But they're not necessarily in the VDOT system yet. Now, I'm not sure about Antioch Glen, but I mean, for instance, on Taylor Ridge or Cunningham, there's street signs. But they're not VDOT. They're not VDOT roads yet.
Then maybe they're not approved. I thought they were, because I think they came through the board and we approved it, but I might be wrong.
I know.
And again, here's a list of some of the problems that are exacerbating the situation. Since the economic crisis, there are many subdivisions in Pulliana that are approved, but the roads have not been taken into the VDOT system. Many of those subdivisions have a substantial number of homes that have been built with unapproved streets having the potential to deteriorate. Also, we've had a lot of developer turnover and bankruptcies that cloud the ownership of the dedicated right-of-way. And some subdivisions have no bonds for us to pull to help fund bringing the roads into the system. The developer may have originally agreed to build the roads to VDOT specs first, but never followed through to have the roads taken into the system, as was the case with Cunningham Meadows. Or B, the roads may have subsequently deteriorated and are now not up to VDOT standards, meaning at one point they were close to be taken in, but for whatever reason, the developer never followed through, and now they're...
So it shouldn't have been allowed to begin with since it was never approved, really, those roads.
The roads were approved by your approval of the subdivision.
Right.
The developer agreed, when the subdivision plot is approved, it says public use roads or not.
Uh-huh.
If they're public use roads, then the developer has agreed to make sure that they meet VDOT standards. But when a developer goes bankrupt and walks away, now all of a sudden you've got 10 homeowners listed there living there that live on a road that they were sold a house on that said it was going to be a public road that was going to have, you know, right, snow plowing and VDOT maintenance and school buses and things like that. So
let me see if I can give you some idea of how this adds up. Anytime you have a major subdivision, the ordinance requires that the roads be VDOT roads. Those roads are depicted on the plat as being dedicated to public use. That means the county owns them as soon as the subdivision plat is put to record. It says it's dedicated. That's approved. When the plat is recorded, that perfects the dedication, and the county owns the road as of that time, immediately. Now, getting it into the VDOT system is the other issue. The one way to do that is to have the roads built and completely finished at the time of the dedication. I guess I've seen that done, but it's extremely rare because it's a big front-end cost. What the developers typically do, and the statute contemplates this, is that the plat is approved, showing the dedicated roads. It's approved, and then before it's recorded, the developer is required to post a bond for the completion of the roads. If the developer doesn't complete the roads, then that's the purpose of the bond. It guarantees the developer's obligation. And in some cases, and frankly, this is because the county was more forbearing than it should have been. I think one of the reasons for that is because in the era of real hot real estate development, it really wasn't an issue. Mm-hmm. It's only really come up with the bubble that burst in 2008. Mm-hmm. Some of these bonds have been allowed either to become ineffective for one reason or another, most of them dealing with letters of credit, which expire. I think that's the ones that are most significant. In other cases, as Jason has said, the road was in whatever condition it was in, either completely finished or nearly finished or whatever, but then it wasn't completely finished and maintained, and the road has gone downhill and needs to be worked to it by the nature of reconstruction. Either any of those alternatives comes up, the road now, VDOT won't take the road because it's not completely finished. And the developer is presumably gone. In a couple of instances we're talking about, the developer's been bankrupt, no longer has an interest in the subdivision. It's been sold out typically by a lender. So the issue is we have roads here that are dedicated to public use and accepted, but they're not maintained by anybody. Now, what needs to happen is somebody needs to come in and finish these roads, put them in a position where the county can then ask VDOT to take them over, because that's the way the process works. It's not rocket science. It can be done. It's an expenditure of money. And what should have been, I say that there's some fault on the part of the county. There is. But it's not entirely the county's fault, because in some cases what probably happened was the developer went through the bankruptcy and the debt got washed out and he was no longer available. In any event, this has been a problem in several subdivisions. What's come up is, and in a couple of cases, but one case in particular, there's been the lender has foreclosed on the loan and sold it out to somebody else, which I would characterize as a successor developer. This is not one lot at a time. It'll be a bunch of lots. And the new developer now wants to come in, build on those lots, and sell them off. Our position is that when there is no bond to ensure the inclusion into the secondary highway system, that becomes a violation of that provision of the zoning ordinance that we talked about. There is no violation up till then because the bond guarantees that inclusion. When that no longer exists, then it doesn't comply with zoning ordinance. And my advice to the zoning administrator has been to withhold further permits for construction and specifically certificates of occupancy. So that's the nature.
Shouldn't the building permit never be issued?
It shouldn't have been. That's right. And they're not going to do that anymore either. There are, I don't know how many, but there are.
Most of these were pre the last 3 or 4 years. Yeah. I mean,
but the ones that are completed throw two up there, Taylor Ridge and Fox Hall, because we've had continuing problems.
There's only one, and that's Cunningham Meadows right now.
Right, but the Taylor Ridge one has had a water issue since I've been on the board. And,
water issue?
Yeah. There's a
drainage issue.
Drainage issue.
Yes, to make the roads VDOT compliant.
Oh, yeah.
And we've been dealing with that for 3 years. I mean, the same
I've
issue.
I've never heard. I haven't heard. Well, I know they had a problem.
Ms. Booker, it has surely been dealt with for the last 5 or 6 years.
I've been on it, so yeah. It's not something I don't know.
It's brought up over and over and over. They've sent the subject sent letters to the state.
Right. But what I'm saying is two concerns about what you said. One is they're actually county roads.
They're public roads.
Yeah, right. And
not county owned, county maintained.
The county owns them, but
the county
not maintained. Not maintained.
No. The county owns them, which would seem to me we're in some sort of liability there.
There's a statute directly on point that relieves the county of any liability for construction of these roads.
Well, who's going to end up paying to? I know what you're going to say. You're going to say the people that live there now.
Not necessarily.
Let's hope not.
One of the things that comes, it depends on the situation. Now, you've just said that Fox Hollow and
Taylor Ridge,
the lots are all sold.
Right.
I'm assuming that's the case. And assuming that's the case, it probably will be necessary for the people that live there to come up with money.
So they bring their children up to the end of the road, and they evidently get someone to plow the road when it's snow on it, or either they have four-wheel drive and don't worry about it.
But that's not the end.
And the buses don't come
pick
up the children?
Yeah, buses don't come.
But
no,
that's not the end of the inquiry, because the problem with it is, mm-hmm. you know, that works for a few years,
yeah.
but sooner or later, if you defer the maintenance, you're going to have to rebuild
right.
this road.
So what's the ultimate answer? Even if you had a bond and the bond wasn't enough to do that, who fills in the rest of the bond?
That's the question. And the question is, the answer to it is going to depend on the specific situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the remedies that we're applying in this, that Mr. Stewart is applying, is that there's going to be no further development. Mm-hmm. We're not going to make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the developer's got a finished house and wants a CO, he's not going to get a CO because it's in violation of the zoning ordinance. But it's in the developer's interest in a case where there's a substantial number of lots still unsold. It's in the developer's interest to hurry that along, let's say. Now, I have heard one developer propose that the developer would go to the other people and the people that live there mm-hmm. and try to work out some deal where there would be voluntary contract, I won't call them assessments, voluntary contributions to build up the road.
Mm-hmm.
That has yet to be worked out.
Right. How do you explain this to the people who are complaining and suffering behind it? I mean, it's no easy thing to explain.
But are you talking about explaining to the developers who want to get a certificate
of occupancy? No, I'm talking about the people who live.
The citizens? Yeah, the citizens that
the
own
citizens
those houses
are
the ones that
are getting
the especially the first ones that bought with
well, everyone that bought had this expectation that it was a public road.
Yeah, so it's
and the realtors probably told them that it was going to be a public road.
Well, there are lots of suggestions.
No,
one suggestion is they need to go talk to a lawyer because they may have a claim against their sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the developer, but they may have a claim against their sellers.
Right.
There are obviously a lot of problems. I mean, I understand the reasoning, but ultimately, if And then looking back at the list of the subdivisions, it's a majority of the subdivisions in the county that are out of compliance.
A lot of them.
No, we have well over 50 subdivisions.
Right. Well, yeah, 50%.
There's a lot of them.
So 50% of the county's
subdivisions are
out of compliance.
I haven't looked at that list in detail. It may be that some of them actually were antedated the ordinance and don't need to be
right.
in the system.
That's true. That's the ordinance.
So, well,
but,
okay.
but you're, yeah. it's yeah. not an insignificant problem.
Right.
Right.
Right. But so, for example, I saw Two Rivers listed on there. Which
no, that's up to compliance.
Two Rivers can't be brought into the system because it doesn't have enough. It doesn't have enough occupied houses.
But he's done the updates recently on that.
No, there are houses that are being built and sold.
They have to be right three now. Per mile before it's eligible to be brought into the system.
Two Rivers had no houses on it 2 years ago, and now it's got 10 houses on it.
It's got a number of houses, but not all of them are occupied.
It still has to be three per mile occupied.
Well, I'm
but I think there's still a bond on that.
Oh, maybe. I'm just pointing that out. If that was, I'm looking at the list here that said it was out of compliance.
I know he recently right. did some work.
And maybe it's in compliance, maybe it's not. I just know for a fact, because I've been there, that it had no houses on it.
It used to be one of my favorite hunting spots.
It's a great spot.
I'm very familiar with it.
It's a beautiful spot. I like it. So my larger point isn't about Two Rivers or not. It's if you have all of these places that have no roads, and the policy is you, A, can't get a building permit, B, CO is secondary to that, because if you can't get a building permit, you can't get a CO, then just stop development in all those places unless the developer or the citizens come up to par. And that's maybe the right answer, but it would also seem that it might have I don't know how we do a case-by-case situation in some of those. I mean, it's tough because...
Well, I don't know what the alternative
you could really, is. You could really stagnate development if you would.
Well, that's possible, that. but the issue during the post-bubble period was you didn't have to worry about stagnating development because there wasn't any development. What's happening now is that the development is becoming more attractive. And it's simply a question of if you want to develop it, we encourage you to do that, but you have obligations that you got to comply with.
And I don't disagree with that. I think it's just one of the, and again, it's sort of like a case by case, because if it's fully built out, all the lots are sold, then there's no developer involved, really. The homeowner is stuck with whatever the decision, that association or that.
Well, it was still the developer's responsibility. Did. Even if they've walked away, it's still their, whoever unless, the developer was, it's their responsibility.
Unless they're bankrupt. And then they're bankrupt. Free of
well,
all
then
responsibility.
They've been relieved of the responsibility.
So now it's the people that live there.
Which is the case with
that's,
Fox Hall.
That's perfectly true, Mr. O'Brien. And it would be nice.
Except
the county's position, as far as I'm concerned, has to be, we don't care who comes up with this money. Mm-hmm. You can take have a bake sale or whatever you want to do, or lean on the developer or sue your sellers or whatever you want to do, but it's not the county's responsibility. And I think I would almost go as far as to say that it's not the county's authority to build these roads.
Okay, can
so
I
what
ask
are,
you a
what
question?
What is our responsibility and why is this?
So in Cunningham Meadows case, let's give that as an example, there was a developer. Developer went bankrupt.
Right.
Bank got it. So that developer's kind of out of the way now. The bank got it.
Right.
But now there's another developer in there that bought a number of lots
right.
and started building. And they don't want to carry the responsibilities that went with that subdivision.
Right.
But if they bought lots and started building in that subdivision, knowing here's what the requirements are, they're the developer, the successor developer now. And
you need an action matter from us to
no.
deal with it?
No.
So, I mean,
no, but I've had many, many questions from multiple
right.
ones of you, and so has Mr. Stewart, and lots mm-hmm. of people are making phone calls and sending emails and sending letter requests. So I want to make sure you knew what the facts were here.
One instance in my experience, that a developer went bankrupt, the lender contracted to sell it to another developer. That developer had vision enough to do his due diligence and found out that these roads weren't finished.
Right.
And the bank in that case came to us and said, you need to let us go ahead and cut this loose. And we said no. And it's the responsibility of somebody, whether it's the developer or the successor developer or whoever it is, to get this done. Now, I think one of the things that comes into this is if a lender, for example, were to foreclose on this and then sell it to a successor developer, I think the successor developer certainly should, in the course of his due diligence, determine that road was not in the system. Now, I know that's been done at least once because I've discussed it with the people involved. In another case, they didn't do that. Now, that's what I would call a lack of due diligence. And that have been involved in business know, when you don't do your due diligence, a lot of times it costs you money. Your investment's not as good as you thought it was.
The sort of sad part about this is I've personally been sort of on and off working with the Taylor Ridge one since I came on the board. And nothing's been able to have been done about it. There's not even a bond on that. And here we are, and I think that's been in over 8 years it's been developed. And there's really nowhere to go except for the residents in that street because it's built out.
There's still lots available in Taylor Ridge.
But who owns the bank, right?
I don't know who owns those lots.
From the county standpoint, it is unfortunate that people have to pay things that should have been paid by others.
Right.
But sooner or later, they're going to have to pay it. Because if they don't get it in the system, then it won't be maintained, and roads don't last if they're not maintained.
Yeah. And the one on Taylor Ridge was an issue because it was the water runoff?
The culverts beneath driveways.
It was an environmental issue. Right. It became. And actually flooding the at the end of the cul-de-sac, the guy's yard, mm-hmm. and it turned into a swamp.
All of those things are a particularly acute example, but that's what happens when a road's not properly finished and maintained. Mm-hmm. Is you have drainage failures, you have pavement breaking up, you have all kinds of things like that. The point that I'm making is that whoever wants the roads finished, or whoever needs to have the roads finished, had better get on with getting it done, because it's not going to get cheaper. It will only get more expensive.
So a couple of other things. In building permits, are we talking about improvements to the buildings? I mean, so if anybody wants to improve in their home in one of those unapproved lots?
We haven't had that come up, but the answer, potentially, yes.
Right. And in terms of, is a building permit and a certificate of occupancy are different things altogether, right?
I mean, they're different things. They're related. Building permit allows you to begin building. The certificate of occupancy is at the end of the building when you let people move in.
Right. And is a criteria listed out in both of those, that they include roads or not include roads or so on? I mean, I think...
The point about it is that when a building is completed or substantially completed, the builder, whoever it is, goes to the zoning administrator in this case and says, I want to move people in, I want to sell it, and I want to move people in, I need a certificate of occupancy. The certificate of occupancy certifies that it's in compliance with the zoning ordinance.
What about selling a house on one of those streets or in one of those subdivisions?
Because I think you make a pretty good case that it's a violation of your general warranty.
Right, because you're compounding the problem by an unsuspecting buyer.
The instance we've been dealing with most recently is with a contract purchaser who has in his contract that the property has to be, at the time, at or before closing, there has to be a CO issue for it.
Right.
And what the developer has asked the county to do is, well, let's give him the CO and we'll solve this later. And I told him that I thought that was entirely unacceptable.
Unless you don't care about the citizens that
live there.
But on, if you take three of those subdivisions, there's for sale signs out in the front, in the front of
This is
53.
This is a problem that needs to be resolved sooner than later.
How can you sell those?
You can't.
Well, they're doing it all the time.
You may or may not be able to. But you know, I haven't done the research to see whether this is a violation of a general warranty, but I suspect it is.
Right. Because it's not something that a buyer would ask.
Well, we normally don't go around and check who's selling houses. I mean, it's not something the county would normally be involved in, and so we haven't looked at that in that way.
Certificate of occupancy do not apply to the resale. They only apply to the initial construction. Is that correct?
Usually. Typically would, right?
What are situations where they would apply?
Well, you might if there's been additional work done, wow, something like that, or the use has changed.
But then I would imagine there's an assumption if you're buying a home.
So, you know, I don't see...
Well, but what does happen is that typically the second...
solution.
Let's say the first purchaser gets his CO, or doesn't get his CO, but he closes. Then he sells to the second purchaser. The second person or... second purchaser doesn't go to the county and get one, but he will typically get asked to see the one that exists.
So, there's no solution. Are there any recommendations of what we can do? Is this a options?
I will say that we as staff, try to do the research to see if there's any money left in the bond. That's one of the first things we do, and then at the same time, we work closely with VDOT to develop a punch list to see what's wrong with the road and match that with what's left in the bond to see if there's anything we can do to bring it into compliance within the limits of the money we have. And the second step after that, since it is in violation of the zoning and subdivision ordinance, is to withhold the permits and certificates of occupancy. And lastly, the Board of Supervisors does have the option to vacate the remaining undeveloped lots on the approved plat. But again, that doesn't bring the roads into the system. It just, or help the existing homeowners, it just stops development.
If we do that one, there's no chance of the existing homeowners getting any of them.
Well, the developer wants to build more houses,
then he has to come back to us.
Well, he's right. Not, if he wants to build more houses because it's part of his business plan, he can't if we vacate the lots. And that may be a bad business thing for the developer. So there just has to be some ways to hold developers responsible. And I feel bad for successor developers, but they know the story. Mm-hmm. This is not something new.
Right.
They know what the rules were, and developers know those
rules. So you're just informing us of the problem because we're getting complaints on the problem.
Yes.
But you guys are doing due diligence in every aspect.
We're doing what we can. We're working with VDOT. We're working with the people in the neighborhoods.
You're doing everything you can do at this point. And you're sort of just telling us you're doing everything you can.
Well, let me tell you one other thing. One other thing that's come up, and this is in the nature of proactive work. We had a developer come in and say, there's a provision in the statute that allows the developer to come in and say, the work, I've completed X percent of the work, I want that proportion of my bond released. He has the right to do that under the statute. We recently had a developer come in and say, the roads are finished. There's punch list stuff, but the roads are finished. I want to release the bond entirely. And our response to that was, as long as it's not in the system, we have to maintain a proportion of the bond to make sure that it will be in the system. And we had a successful negotiation with that developer that resulted in a substantial reduction in the bond, but renewing the additional bond necessary to keep it in the system. So what I'm saying is that our system of keeping track of these things has been less than perfect. Hopefully this is an eye-opener, and it will be improved in the future. And
I think we need a set policy on when we look at the build out and determine when we're going to talk with the developer and say, okay, this, you know, this many houses, what's the plan? And then certainly I don't think we should permit streets to be built first in the hopes that they'll be taken in, as was the case in one subdivision.
Right.
That's really what was contemplated by the statute originally, but the problem is, and I think this has changed over time, The problem with it is if you build a road and get it in absolutely apple pie order, VDOT won't take it because it doesn't have the three occupied houses on it. Mm-hmm. Then as you build the houses, you put extraordinary wear on it, and right. it tends to break it up. And that's what typically happens with an instance like that. Mm-hmm. So it's really better for the developer to bond the roads rather than build them.
Right.
In the instance we were just talking about, one of the things that happened was that the developer didn't have three occupied houses per mile, wanted this bond reduced substantially. But one of the things he had done, which is the right thing to do, is you don't finish the top course, the so-called riding course, because if you're driving bulldozers and things mm-hmm. like that over it, you'll break it up. So one of the things we did was make sure that, that the bond is maintained to put those finishing elements on it once there are enough people to get it in the system.
Okay.
You have anything else?
So
you're going to get lots of calls, and I'm urging you to be sympathetic to the residents that live there,
yeah.
and not unfair to the developers. But we have rules that cover most of that.
Sure.
Yeah.
To me, the
big problem was the.
I can give you a copy of the
building
list.
Permit. You have the CR. Sure. That to me is. I don't understand that.
Pardon?
I said I get the building permit thing and. No argument there, but
once you allow them to build it, you ought to allow the people to go into them.
The problem is that if you issue the CO, then you've got one more disadvantaged citizen.
Thank you.
But I guess the question is that, I mean, if they're coming in fully informed, is that our responsibility or not?
What typically happens is he can't come in because his lender won't do it, won't give him the money without the CO. So, in effect, we would be enabling the additional burden.
And then, I guess one last part to it is when title searches are performed, when that effort is being done in terms of the history and so on, is the request of is that typical that would be discovered in that?
It's not a question of the title examination.
Or the surveying, I guess, maybe.
No, it's not a question of either one of those. It's a question of what the closing. Agent, whether it's an attorney or whoever, the settlement agent, what he does. And one of the things he has to do is comply with the lenders, assuming there's a lender, which there almost always is.
Right.
The lender will give you a set of requirements, and one of those is to show the CO. And that's how this has come up.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, it's unfortunate because people can make huge financial investments and unknowingly.
Ooh, the developer?
On all sides, I mean.
No, the developer. The only one we're talking about now that has a certificate of occupancy problems is not the purchaser, because the purchaser can't purchase. It's contingent. This is the developer.
Right. You're talking about the Sale Ridge situation.
No, Cunningham Meadows.
No, yeah, I know. You're talking about Cunningham Meadows.
Yeah, Can Cunningham Meadows, where the bank sold its property to this developer?
Liberty.
And there's Liberty, and they're saying they're not a successor. They just bought property to build houses, and they can't do that now. They even got a house built they can't sell. So who do they get after? Do they go back after the bank? Do they go after the developer to the bank? Or can they come after the county?
They can't come after the county.
They cannot.
They
say
cannot
that again.
Because
they
the
cannot.
County is specifically relieved of liability for building roads by statute.
Right. So they have no comeback on
that. That's exactly what they've tried to do.
Right.
And apparently their attorney didn't know about that statute.
Uh-huh.
So I pointed it out to him.
Right. Okay.
But those developers knew
mm-hmm.
the status of the roads
sure.
when they took the subsequent lots
right.
and just hoped it would go
hoped
through.
It would go away.
And okay. they did get away with some of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Sycamore Square, that's only some of the streets that aren't approved. Yeah, I'm asking. I don't know.
You know, Steve, Sycamore Square?
I thought Sycamore Square was fine. Yeah, because
the
buses.
So it's up there. In the,
yeah, some of these, this the name may need to be updated. Some of these may be now on, and a couple of them may not be going public, because I'm not sure my subdivision's going to public roads. It may be private the whole time. It just hasn't had its second final layer blocked up because they're still building. But.
And there's Sycamore Square somewhere else. Don't we have two Sycamore
Squares?
Yeah,
North Boston.
There's another one.
North Boston Road, but that's
those are VDOT roads.
Because I had some speed on.
What's this?
Okay, do we have any more questions for Jason, Mr. Jason Stewart? Anybody? Thank you.
So if you have concerns,
yes,
please contact me and or directly Jason Stewart. But on any of these issues,
right,
we will then research and tell you the specific answer. But you're going to get a variety of stories. And we're not trying to
stick it to anybody.
We just want to make sure it's as fair as possible and make sure people are held responsible for their part.
Yeah. Like I said, we went through the Farms North.
But I'm just hoping
to talk loud so they can hear.
Yeah.
Kent Farms North went through that. I talked about Kent Farms North because they contacted me.
Right.
They got with VDOT. VDOT told them what they needed to do.
Right, they
said,
did it.
Well, no, ma'am. They said, it's just going to cost too much money.
Yes.
We'll buy a tractor instead and buy the road.
Yeah, and the developer just isn't available to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And the problem, they buy a tractor was cheaper to buy a tractor with
the problem with that is that
it's
technically they
maintenance.
Don't have the right to do that. They can do it and nobody's going to stop them. But what happens if you get in with a tractor and tear the road up?
Or someone's yard up.
Then they have to fix it.
I mean, these are public roads. They need to be in the system to be maintained.
It's especially because of the downturn.
Yeah.
So many things got goofy.
This is a very unwise thing not to get this done. Because I'm familiar with private roads and even extraordinarily affluent private road subdivisions come up with deferred maintenance problems that are prohibitively expensive. And they need to be on top of it so that it doesn't get to that point.
Right. All right. Thank you all. Now, we're going to the consent agenda. Does anyone like to pull anything?
I was looking at something if I can find it.
Take your time.
Where I am.
Okay. Thanks. Can I just go through what's on the consent agenda while you're looking?
Yeah.
We have minutes of February the 11th, work session minutes. We have minutes of February the 18th, regular meeting. We have the proclamation celebrating the 40th anniversary of JABA.
Okay.
We have Project Lifesaver programs from our sheriff. We have VDOT secondary street acceptance request, Zion Industrial Park by Mr. Popovich, Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund request, Blue Banner Middle School track, information technology internal budget transfer from our IT director, Ms. Jonathan, and Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund request, workspace renovation and space utilization, CIP project, and that's with MACA. And the last one is Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund Request Utility Trailer, and that's from our Public Works Director, Mr. Wayne Stevens.
What is the... Okay, I'm on L.
L.
Information Technology. I'm sort of curious. Here you want to transfer $15,600, and with that, you're saving over $21,000 over 3 years. Yet a one-year contract for 3 years would have been $12,500. So why are you asking for 15?
We're not asking for 15.
Well, you're wanting to...
It's not new money.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
So why would you not just ask for $3,100? Because you already have that in the budget.
Because I can't approve anything above $10,000 moving between budget lines. So this is a $15,000 move between budget lines so that we brought it to the board. That's why it's on the consent.
Oh, okay.
But it's not
confused.
Right, not new costs. It's just anything above $10,000 we put on the board agenda for moving.
Okay.
And it's not new dollars.
And, we're requesting zero additional dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. All right, anything
just
else?
Just reclassification of those dollars.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Ellenbrook had something.
Yes.
No, I was just wondering what the Project Lifesaver program was and if there was some kind of...
what tab is that?
Sheriff,
it's I.
Come Captain Hill. Thanks, Captain.
I just thought, other than just passing some of these things through, if we...
He has a write-up.
I understand the public says.
Yes, the Project Lifesaver Program is a program that was designed initially to deal with Alzheimer's patients, those that have cognitive disorders and have a tendency to wander. this program, of course, now serves about 4.5 million residents in the United States with the equipment and program that's put forth through Project Lifesaver. This program, we've been provided the opportunity to participate, being a small community on the same equal platform as bigger communities, because we have the same issues. And in Fluvanna County, of course, we frequently have to deal with people who have wandered away, who have a cognitive disability such as dementia, Alzheimer's, what have you. And the Project Lifesaver equipment that this program offers us gives us the ability to track people, because they'll wear either a bracelet or an anklet that has an RFID transmitter that allows us to be able to use the equipment to track where they are and locate them faster.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Because Java has this smart foot thing that you put in a shoe, and they track them, and families can track them. You can track them on your telephone.
I just wanted to, it was an important thing, and sometimes our consent agenda just gets passed by, and I think the public needs to know.
That's a good idea.
Absolutely.
I think Moselle wants one for Bob in case he's out on a cigarette break.
Yes,
I want to be able to shock him real good.
Now, we can't provide that service not with that equipment.
I can get one of Frankie's rabbit dog collar.
Please. Oh, it would do so much.
The track. Does anybody have a question about the track?
No, but thank you very much.
Absolutely.
It's some of those things that
one at a time. One at a time, please.
Anything else you need to pull? Thank you, Mr. Von Hill.
Yes, ma'am.
Officer Von Hill. Captain. Von Hill. Anything else? Would someone, if we don't have anything else, would someone please give a motion? Ms. Weaver, did you finish?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Would you like
Madam
to make
Chair,
a motion?
Madam Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda that you have just gone over.
All right. Second. It's a motion by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? If not, the Chair votes aye. If we have any unfinished business? Any new business? I was thinking about, we have a lot of boards and commissions and people who volunteer to work on those boards. Could be sometimes maybe this spring they could decide on which board member meeting they'd like to come to, and we can kind of see them, see who they are, and say.
Can I suggest maybe May or June?
Yeah, and we can
get after the budget.
We don't need to give them anything in particular, but we could have them to stand, and we could tell them how much we appreciate the work that they're doing for us. There's a lot of boards and commission people I don't even know.
I bet with all of her.
Yeah, if we could do a few.
It'd be nice to recognize them.
Who they are.
Ms. Booker, can we put that on the second meeting in August?
Yes.
No, because we don't meet.
Okay,
that was my suggestion.
I'll get with you with a list, and then you can kind of identify which ones you're talking about.
Sure, and
some
they
probably
can
don't lend itself to that.
It's a sad
some
world
of them may
when
not,
you
may not want to, come.
Sure, yes,
but
ma'am. I'll get you the list.
They may just appreciate a note.
Can I interrupt
something?
You?
Yeah, you just did.
Well,
I'm done. I'm done.
That was two words.
Next time, just tap me on the shoulder. Mr. Uttenbach, you make me lose my ladylike self.
I'm keeping you down.
That's okay. Yeah. Okay, so do we have any more new business? If not, I'd like to open the second public comments. If you would like to speak to the board, would you come forward to the mic, give your name and address, and you have 5 minutes. Anyone? I'm disappointed.
It's nothing but staff saying.
Okay, I'll close the second public comment. And now we have closed meeting. Mr. Weaver?
Madam Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enters into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A.3, Section 2.2-3711A.6, Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, investment of funds, and legal matters.
All right. Mr. Weaver, we have the wrong one.
I think there was an additional one for.
No, we had four.
3711A5 for prospective industry.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Here?
Yeah.
Yes, yes, sir.
You want an okay.
All right.
Section 2.2-3711A.5 of the Code of Virginia, to repeat myself, 1950 is amended for the purpose of discussing prospective industry.
So the motion is to discuss personnel matters under A1, real estate under A3, prospective industry under A5, investment of funds under A6, and legal matters under A6.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Second.
So
okay.
We have them all. We have a second. Motion is by Mr. Weaver and second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
5 minutes.
Chair votes yes. We have a 5 minute break.
5 minutes.
It's 6:41.
Get your tennis shoes on. You're right.
Session first.
Madam Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting. A second and a recorded vote needed.
Second.
All right. Mr. Sheridan, Mr. Weaver.
Yeah.
All right.
Aye.
The chair will try. Okay.
Got to extend.
Most of it. Extend.
So made.
Second.
And for another hour,
wait.
Up until
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock. All right. Motion by Mr. Weaver to expand to 9. Second by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor? Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Second was Mr. Sheridan. All right.
Motion to close the meeting.
All right. Now we need to go to adjourn.
So motion to adjourn.
Anybody? Second.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Weaver. Second by Mr. Sheridan to adjourn. All in favor?
Good meeting. Thank you all very much. It was great discussions.